Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor. Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swamp.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Schkelly. Aldi. Million. Rumli.
Tribe spoke.
Scheibe Tottenham.
Ship.
Tribe
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Brains vs Brawn. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to discuss week 6. We are back on form. There were some twists. There were still some twists, but everyone got to vote and that is now my bar that I, you know, like things. And it was fun. There was so much strategy. There were 2 plurality votes. There were 3 epic blindsides. Like, I really enjoyed this week. So to discuss it, I brought in one of my favorite Survivor players who I always love to chat to. It is the great Tessa O'Halloran. Tessa, thank you for being here.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. I literally just watched this episode and I still feel like I'm like fuzzy and happy. I was sitting up and like clapping in my seat watching it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, okay. I have a theory. Something is going on because we know you got voted out in the most epic of plurality votes, the 3-2-2-2. Now, when you come on the podcast, like we talked about Tony's epic winners at war plurality vote, and now we've had 2 this week, like I think we might be manifesting something when you're a guest on the podcast.
I'm absolutely sure that's exactly what it is. I don't know. I'm just going to have to make time for more podcasts because yeah. Good to watch.
You're going to have to be my guest every single week because I want to see it.
Like, do that.
Yeah. I mean, look, maybe you don't have time to come on every podcast. I know it's been a big like year and a half since we last spoke to you on the podcast. A lot of life change is happening for you. So catch the listeners up on what you've been up to since we spoke to you during Winners at War.
I reckon I was still in London last time we spoke, wasn't I?
It was about April 2020, probably. So
maybe I just moved. I was probably pregnant. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. That's the news.
I would have just been back and pregnant. And now I've got my daughter, which is the big news, Agatha. And that's pretty much my entire life, even though I'm like back at work and I have this pandemic thing going on. But yeah, it's pretty much just my baby.
Yeah.
Back in Australia with a baby.
We need to thank you as a podcast community for taking time out of your schedule, which is currently doctoring in a pandemic while having a small child. And you're still here to talk about plurality votes with us. That is so nice of you.
This is not nice of me. This is like the nicest part of my day. I've got a coffee. My baby is not in the room right now. She's taken care of. I could not be happier to be exactly where I am right now.
Imagine if we asked you for last week and you're like, I'm dealing with a lot right now. And then I have to do that week as well. But we gifted you like this nice week as well. So like, you know, a little bit of a break from momming and doctoring to talk about Good Survivor, actually.
So good. So good.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot to ask you about. I need your thoughts on the whole season so far because I like checked in last week. I'm like, you still coming on next week? And you're like, oh, are you checking in that I haven't quit? So I feel like you're probably riding the wave and the roller coaster like the rest of us.
Look, I'm feeling like a lot of players on this season, I got to say, a little bit fickle about it. I reckon you just caught me on a high and I'm like, I love this season. I was just talking to my mum and she was like, this season's amazing. How great is this cast? Like, love what the producers are doing. Feel like I would have felt a little differently last week. But you know what? Like, it's always the same with Australian Survivor. Like, there are ups, there are downs. You've got to go with it. And I think overall it's been a really exciting cast. There are some incredible people out there, like, you know, some really inspiring people, some great game players, some chaotic game players. I love more than half the cast still left. And I mean, even just watching them deal with the twists, which say what you will about them, the players have made it interesting. So it's been a really good season, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting when we look back after the season to try and rank it and put it and stuff. And I genuinely was thinking about this. I'm like, I think if you were to like fill out a survey of what parts you like, it would all be like zeros and ones and then like nines and tens. Like nothing has been even. It's all just been extreme. And then you come off a really fun week. You're like, it's great. You come off last week. You're like, I want to quit the show, you know? And I'm like, I'm scared about what, you know, because it's been so high. I'm like, you know, what comes up must come down. And I'm like a little concerned about next week now.
I know. You go from nothing has any meaning. Is this even a game anymore? To like, oh, these players are like next level thinking and they've got so much agency and seeing so far ahead. And then again, we're like, nothing has any meaning. It's a real up and down rollercoaster. It's a bit like life, eh?
Yes. Yeah, except hopefully a bit more up at the moment than what life has been through COVID. But look, this week was fun, and we're going to focus on those positives while still probably criticizing some of the twists, but more positive than last week. And I need to get your take on some of these players, because I was thinking, you know, like Hayley, for example, who's been obviously such a standout. Now, if she had filled out preseason, what survivor are you most like, surely it would have been you. There are so many similarities. Like, you're both brainy, Ravenclaw, smart, super fan women in the medical field. Like, it just feels right. Do you see that?
That is way more praise than I deserve. I think Hayley's incredible. I definitely, look, I'm glad that she's messed it up a little bit last week because she was becoming unrelatably perfect to me.
She still kind of is, though. She got voted out and she still is.
Oh, she's so great. I mean, I reckon there's been a few times I've been watching her and just like, Hayley, like, you're what we've needed in Australian Survivor. She is this strong, smart woman who plays the game like a player, but is still like seems to be really respectful and nice. And like, I think she's what we've been missing. We haven't had a Hayley. I get
we
that.
Had you.
I totally relate to her, but she's so much better than me.
No, I do think like this is the archetype. Like she's in your mold. Like she's the Tessa mold.
Clearly, if anything, I'm now in her mold, though, right? Like, Hayley is the mold that people want to be. It was, like I'd say, it was Phoebe. Phoebe was the mold I wanted to be when I played.
Right.
And now Hayley is the mold.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the comparison across the three of you, but I think if Hayley wins, it probably will shift to being her mold, I have to say. But until then, like, you know, who knows? She could go out next. You'd be in a fairly similar placement, and you came first, so then it will still be yours.
And I also love, I mean, credit to the producers for the way that they've shown her. I know they've shown her a lot, and I know. But I feel like they've shown some warts, and they've shown us, you know, they showed us her messing up, and they showed us her realizing that and her recovery and how she managed the people around her. And now this week they've shown her, like, unable to help herself, going back exactly to how she was before and, like, reveling in it. Ugh, it's just beautiful.
Yeah. What other characters are standing out to you for the good and the bad?
Oh, I love Danny. I don't know if that's left field, but I love Danny. And I was so happy when she won the car. I know car curse, it makes me a little bit nervous, but I feel like she's been an interesting, dynamic player who's not afraid to go out there and make moves. She doesn't always read the room, but I like people who make mistakes. I think Flick is gutsy. She was one of my favorites at the start, and she's, you know, like she's made some mistakes as well. She's done some things I wouldn't have done, but I think you can't go past her for gutsy. I've left George until third, which the show was never done. Mm-hmm. But I love George. I've loved him all along. I have loved his warts and all edit. I love the way that he seems like he's socially not reading the room, right? But then he goes away and does exactly what he needed to do to push himself forward. And if you look even at the votes post-merge, I think it's what, 3 out of 4, maybe 3 out of 5, wherever we're at, votes were his shots. Like he is taking all the shots.
Yeah, he's been a very active player since the merge. I mean, he's been a very active player the whole time, but I would say since the merge, it's been good, is what I would say.
And wait, while I'm heaping praise, another left field heap of praises for Emmett. I loved Emmett.
Me too. I also got to that point and then I had to do a lot of self-reflection.
Right? I was resisting how much I loved him and I could feel myself doing it. I was like, it's okay, you know, you've got to let go of all your past trauma and just love Emmett. It's fine to let him in. he has such great game awareness. He did some incredible things pulling Braun together. And I actually think he's really respectful of the game.
Yeah, like he is. What is happening?
Is he a fan or is he just intuitive?
I don't know. Like, Nick asked him on Talking Tribal with at his Jury Villa exit, like, are you a fan of the game? He's like, yeah, I love the game. It's like, well, that wasn't really the question. Like, are you a fan of the game? Not just that you enjoy Survivor, like, as a concept, but...
No, are you a fan as in, do you like this? We get it. You're there. You have to say you like it. Like, yeah. Are you a fan?
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe his reticence to properly answer the question might speak to his level of fandom, but, like, that's okay. And I know that people were having trouble with his whole, who deserves deserves to be there and stuff. I do think a lot of that was game. Like, in his Drew Villa, he's talking about who he thinks, you know, really are good winner picks. He's mentioning someone like Away. And I think it was good strategy for him. And also, like, that's who he is. Like, we can't just love the characters that are exactly like us. You have Haley, who is exactly like you. Emmett is a different person. Is he someone I'm going to be friends with in real life? I can't imagine that to be true. But I loved him as a character. I think he had way more game than I could ever have given him credit for. And, like, he seems like a fine enough guy. Like, he ended up being enjoyable. It was a huge turnaround for me. Like, the second episode where he was being that cocky, I was like, I can't even watch him. Like, I strongly wanted him to go over Gavin because I just thought, it's not fun for me. It's not even, like, fun to hate him. And then I got to, like, it is a little fun to hate him. And then I got into, like, I think I even like him now. So it was, like, a journey for me as well.
Fun to like him? I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure how it feels for me. Yeah.
It's weird.
Mm. I don't know. But I did. I liked him. Yeah. I like him. Yeah. I think he was great. Happily watch him again.
Yeah, we probably will. I mean, he's one of four characters who are on the show currently. And look, we do need to talk about maybe some more general things. I mean, the edit continues to be ridiculous. We have to call it out. Gerald got no confessional since Braun. He went home like that. 9 episodes in a row, no confessional, including in his boot. Andrew got 5 in the last 2, but until then was 4 confessionals in 16 episodes.
I mean, Gerald, in his boot episode at the reward, I was watching it thinking, what did Gerald think, though? Like, I was literally thinking, I would love to know what Gerald thinks. And it was his boot episode, and we didn't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed my exit with Gerald and Laura. I haven't spoken to Emmett yet. I have him later this afternoon. But yeah, I mean, I think Gerald was doing a lot, and as proven by his exit that we didn't get to see, because they don't know how to tell the story anymore of, like, groups or duos. It has to be, like, Emmett and side friends, and they can explain Gerald going home as, like, he was important to Braun and to Emmett. So as long as you understand Braun as a concept and Emmett as a person, you understand this move without needing to know about Gerald. But, like, that's not good storytelling. Wei has not had a confessional, I think, since the merge. She is a swing vote in the final episode with Haley. We hear a lot from Haley, and that's great. I want to know what Haley's thinking, but I really also want to know what Wei is thinking. I think it's important. So,
yeah,
I mean, we need to call out the editing, because I think that's something when we're looking back on the whole season. I know it's been rocky for the last few seasons of Australian Survivor at the best of times anyway, but this really feels like, you know, you go to template and it's like Australian Survivor and there's 4 characters there, and it's Danny, Emmett, Haley, and George. And I'm like, yep, those are the 4 characters in the season. That's all they really care to help you invest in.
Yeah, I know, it's hard, isn't it? Especially when we get to this point when the dynamics are shifting so much and there's these, like, interesting pairs happening, but and they've all voted for each other as well. Like, there's nobody who hasn't voted for the others, or at least against the others' groups.
Mm.
But we don't know what half of them actually think, and it's really hard to, I guess, pick where the dynamics are going to move.
It's really hard because the dynamics at this point are, like, so tenuous, some of the most fluid I've ever seen, and highly individual. Like, the pair is George and Kara, and even they don't technically vote together on 2 of the votes of this week. And I think that's what makes them so threatening, is that they're a clear duo, whereas, like, you know, everyone else has been so individual. Now you have, like, Flick and Emmett who have been back together but were not on the same page in OG Braun. But you don't really get to hear from Flick about, like, why that happened. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's such an individual game. It's never been more necessary to hear from each individual person.
I mean, Danny and Flick. Flick targeted Danny. She led the target against Danny in that, what, who went? I can't even remember now.
Gerald,
yeah.
Yes.
And the Gerald vote. Sorry, it's so confusing. And now they're kind of the pair, aren't they? They were like, Flick was telling Danny how much she loves her and she was the clear and obvious choice and to go to the reward, like, they seem to be tight. But she just led a charge against her.
Yeah. And even beyond that, it's just not a relationship we've seen very much of before at all. So it's not even like we can understand you were that close, you've broken apart strategically, but we kind of understand you coming back together. Like, they're saying how much they love each other. We don't know much about that relationship. And, like, I think with Australian Survivor, it continues to be, we will tell you about this thing as soon as you need it. And, like, even with Flick, and we'll talk about her mom and, like, the tragedy around all of that, but they introduced that storyline to us in the episode it's going to be relevant to the story, whereas, like, they all got images from home, their characters on the show, like, how have we not known that this was part of Flick's journey the whole time? Like, how have we not added that weight to her character? Because it is so relevant to how she's playing the game, that she's carrying that extreme tragedy from home and what she's been going through over the last few years. But Australian Survivor is like, you'll know about it the second before it is relevant. And maybe not even then. Maybe someone like Gerald, you'll never hear from him before he goes home. And he did not get a confessional since Braun. I cannot reiterate more how ridiculous that is. So it is something that we have to talk about, because I think while the dynamics are so interesting, it does kind of really soften it a little bit for me, because I'd love to hear more from these people and just know what they're all individually thinking, because it's so disparate from each other.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm still reeling when I'm thinking about it. Hayley and Wei. Like,
yeah.
Wei leading the charge against Hayley as well. Like, not leading the charge, because Wei hasn't really led a charge in a while. But they seem to be paired up now, and Wei was pretty against Hayley like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. Wei has received zero confessionals in the time since being part of a vote to vote Hayley out and then being to her like two-person swing. Like, that is a big journey for Wei. I'd like to hear how she feels about it and not just, like, in an eventual exit. So, yeah, that's, you know, a negative thing. To talk about the positives, as we're talking about it, like, the dynamics are ridiculous. Like, this is
so fun.
And now we have a four, and I don't know that that will stick. Because it's, like, Hayley and George, and also nothing sticks. Nothing sticks from one episode to the next, so that's fun.
I don't know that we have a four there. Yeah. I'm looking at it thinking, I just can't see that sticking. I mean, I love George and Kara. I really think that they've played the pendulum, which is good to see as a pair. I always think that that's the best way to do it. And Kara's take on things, I think, is interesting in terms of how she sees herself getting to the end. And I'm not sure that she does. I'm not sure that she's someone who is looking at her path forward. In fairness, it probably would have been good for her to lose George. I think if she'd lost George, she was going to the end.
Mm. I mean, Kara, I think a lot of people will want to sit next to in the end, because she's someone who George doesn't think he can trust with, like, a simple plan. And that's not a great perception for even her number one ally to have you of her. Like, we can talk about why George doesn't clue her in on the idol, but surely she's not that much of a liability that she can't be clued in on literally the tiniest of plans. Like, literally just, you're playing this idol now. It's not that hard. So I think that she might have a run anyway, but yeah, definitely these big threats like a Hayley and George are probably coming for each other. They're probably quite exposed in such a small group. So I'm definitely interested to see where it'll go. And this week, I mean, I think we want to kind of go through it vote by vote, because all of the votes were so different this week. Like, the dynamics, they led on from each other in, like, small ways. I feel largely through what George was doing, but this was, like, the week of the most where I was like, okay, this is, like, bouncing around and isn't as, like, unified necessarily as other weeks. Did you feel the same?
Definitely. But I do think that there's, a common thread there of George taking shots. Like, Gerald was George. Laura was George.
Yeah.
Was Hayley. That's it. They were the shot takers, and they were just moving people around them. And I think that's, you know, George and Hayley are probably the two players with the most deliberate agency in the game. And I think what we've seen this week is them moving people around.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. For me, the way that I track this week in my mind is, like, George does things mostly that have, like, that are, like, mostly, I think, great. Like, I think he's playing amazing right now, but have, like, little tiny faults, and then he has to cover from those faults, and that leads him to do the next big thing. Like, the first shot that's taken is definitely Danny with the Emmett stuff, and then Emmett comes back. So that's, like, the big crack. But then George comes through, does this epic vote. All right, that's a George thing. But then the tiny little fault. Why is Kara not in that? Kara's kind of been alienated out of the brains. It's five brains, not Kara, which is something we can talk about. Now, with the twist, Kara's a little exposed. Kara's not included. Now he needs to protect Kara. So he finds an idol and he does it. Another big George thing. But then it's, like, way too transparent and not well executed. So then he draws a ton of attention to him and Kara. Now he needs to cover that by bringing Hayley and Wei on side, which is, like, a George and Hayley thing. So, like, every step for me is George, like, doing, you know, eight good things, two not so good things, and then having to, like, cover for the two not so good things. I kind of see him as, like, a hamster on a wheel. He's just, like, having to constantly run to, like, keep up with his own schemes. And, like, to his credit, he is still there running on the wheel. And that's why I'm so impressed with it. But definitely he was, like, covering for a lot of his own mishaps within, like, giant big plays that were also really cool to me.
I love it. It's so frenetic. I feel like, and I mean, he's great at finding things, isn't he? But he never keeps them in his pocket for 5 seconds because he needs to use it straight away to cover up whatever he's just messed up.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I love it.
Yeah, he is exceptionally fun. And I think, like, you know, a chaotic game is good for George because he can keep up with that and he seems to have fun with it. So, look, let's talk about this first move, this first plurality vote against poor Gerald. Didn't even get to talk to us about it. But, you know, we can talk about the execution. What did you think of this move for George, even in just, like, the intent? Did you like this move to blow up the game right here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what you said about George thriving in chaos, isn't it? And that's why this sort of pendulum strategy works for him. It's that he just keeps causing cracks and making it so that both sides still need him. You know, if he sticks with Braun and just picks off Brains, he and Kara become dispendable so quickly.
Mm.
Whereas I think if he, picks from both sides, he keeps himself in that swing position, which is exactly what Haley pointed out when she was talking to the rest of the group. And I think it was the right move for him, yeah. What did you think?
I mean, I really liked it. I mean, firstly, I just thought it was well done. Like, the fact that he could be in every single plan, which is something I said on Twitter and Talking Tribal, because I loved it. Like, he's in the fake Haley plan. He's even brought into Danny's KFC alliance, even though he didn't go to the KFC. She's, like, talking to him about it on the bench. Then he's obviously part of Braun with their idol plan to get out Danny, and then he creates his own plan. And I'm like, how are you the one person that's in every plan? Last week we left, you know, it might feel like a long time ago, but we left it with you being the one that was wishy-washy. Everyone was really wary of, because they know that when you're in on plans, you will spill the beans and screw them. And then you did that. You literally did that. So I thought to be included is, whether it's because he's numerically relevant or has a good social game or whatever he's done to make himself necessary, even within, you know, the liability that he is, I thought that was incredibly done.
How much do you think it is just that George pops himself into every conversation, and that's why Andrew was so annoyed at him at the well? Like, is he just, when people are talking, he's like, oh, here I am, talk to me too. And that's how he gets himself into every plan?
Well, I mean, if they're going to include someone who is a liability just because he's there, that's still on them, you know? And like, I just don't know how he was included in all of this. And I really did like the move. Like, I think he gets so much done. Like, I agree. So, you know, thriving on chaos, that's good for him. And then, like, he cuts people off at the knees with Danny. Like, he cuts her off, but then he's trying to bring her in next time, which I thought was good. He depowers Emmett entirely in that vote. He finally flushes the idol that he rightfully should have flushed last week, and then goes on to find the idol the next day, which possibly was rehidden because of that. So he gets so much done in that. I thought it was great. My one question mark is, why does he leave out Kara? Because then, it's chicken or egg for me. It's like, does he leave her out because she's too close to Braun, and because she seems close to Braun, close to Emmett, and because she's close to Braun and Emmett, she becomes like someone who can be voted out the next time? Or because he leaves her out, that makes her feel more Braun and she's not included in Brains, and that's why they go to vote her out next time? Like, does he alienate her, or can he not include her because she's already so alienated from Brains, if that makes sense?
I thought he had left her in there deliberately as like a shoe in the door to move back to Braun. But that's obviously not what happened at all.
It's so hard because the twist comes in and makes everyone immune. And like, then he can't really follow out necessarily what he was going to do. But I did see this move for him as being more concrete than he's used to. He was like, this is our time to take power as Brains. And he kept saying the five Brains. And I was like, he said one time six, but I was like, where is Kara in this? I think she's been seen as Braun since she got voted to Braun. She seems quite close to Emmett. Like, I'm wondering, was she just really not included with this group? And is that why she became so disposable in the next episode?
Yeah, I was having trouble getting my head around how it ended up so unanimous on Kara in the next episode.
Mm.
Weirdly unanimous.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we can talk about, how they didn't split the vote and why Kara, because that's something that, you know, I've been thinking about as well. But part of my blame has to go to George. Like, he puts his number one ally voting incorrectly. Like, no wonder she's on the back foot. And if she's part of it, we didn't get to hear it, obviously, because why would we? Because, you know, she's Kara, not George. But also, the Brains who are voting and who are now in power clearly don't see her as part of it, because they are leading the charge to get rid of her in the next episode. So I feel like he really puts her out on a limb. Again, he saves it, he covers it, he's running on the wheel. But that, for me, was my biggest question mark. I was like, you've kind of exposed Kara right now. And then with, like, the magnitude of the twist, where so many people were immune, like, it put her in a dangerous spot.
Yeah, that's true. I'd watched it thinking that Danny was the one left in a dangerous spot and Gerald vote, because she was the only one who voted alone. She voted with nobody.
Yeah, I mean, she was in a very dangerous spot. I mean, that was what was so cool about George's move, is that it put Emmett in a terrible spot. Like, he was scrambling from that vote, you know, and they eventually vote him out and he's clawing his way back, and then George eventually cuts it off. But he puts a lot of people in a bad spot. I mean, I don't know that he put Danny in the spot. I think Danny might have put herself there. Because we need to talk about this KFC alliance. Danny's got branding on point, I will say. Like, they were using what she was saying about KFC in the ads for the episode, and I was like, Danny's going to get a branding endorsement. Like, incredible work.
I hope she does. D-Max Danny.
Yeah, with the car and the KFC, I was like, this girl is coming out here with, like, a bucket of chicken and a car.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, KFC Alliance is obviously destined to fail in Australian Survivor.
Yes.
Well, ours was the big threats, right, at the KFC.
Yes. You had a lot of named alliances. You had the Champagne Alliance, and then so KFC was you, Lockie, Luke, and Sarah, right?
No, I wasn't there. It was,
oh, right. That was Ziggy.
Ziggy,
Who was your KFC Alliance? Yeah.
They were KFC, yeah.
Yeah, they were KFC. All right.
Yeah. Well, they weren't KFC. They tried to be. Same as Danny tried to be.
KFC Alliance is a curse. Like, you talk about the car curse, but the KFC Alliances do not get off the ground. Like, it's good chicken and it's good, I assume I'm a vegetarian, it's good sponsorship to the point where, like, yeah, like, my husband went out the next day, he got KFC. It made him, like, so hungry for KFC. Like, if we hadn't eaten dinner, he would have been ordering it on the spot. So, like, amazing branding, bad strategy, I would say.
You know what? Chicken is the only thing that I was vegetarian for ages. And it's the only thing when I was pregnant that changed. I love chicken now. And so I'm probably going to have to go and get some KFC too. I hadn't thought of it for just this minute.
There you go. This podcast is really good at like pushing the sponsors as well. But all right. So KFC aside, Danny's at this reward and she's like, this is a cool group of people. And it's like, is it? It's like such a random group of people.
No, but she does it at the next reward as well. I think she just loves that. Like, we're all here eating food. What do you reckon? She reminds me of Sarah sometimes.
Sarah Lucina. Oh, Sarah Talik.
Sarah Talik. But, like, I know this is a weird pull, but sometimes the way that she sort of looks around and she's like, I can see us all working together. Guys, what do you think? Should we work together? It was a very Sarah thing.
Really? Because, you know, you're right. In the car award, she's like, it's funny how, like, rewards can really bring people together. And I'm like, it absolutely didn't happen last time. Like, is that something? Like, it's something that is technically true but has not been working for you. So, yeah. Like, the way that this was happening in motion, like, at the time, you're like, what are you doing? Like, the read to do it with Flick and Gerald, who are, like, so not on board. And then she's, like, doing it with, like, a couple of brains who, why would they leave their other allies? Like, it's Lauren Way. Like, Andrew's not part of that. And she's like, this group right here. And no one is really into that. Obviously, she votes alone in that episode. So
Way and Laura were, like, salivating when she suggested voting out Emmett, though. They were like, yeah. But I wonder if it was the editing or if it was really like this. But Flick was like, you know, face palming.
Yeah.
Who knows if Gerald said anything because we didn't hear it. But, like, I wonder if it was as obvious on the spot that they were just not into it.
Well, the brain thing is, like, you do have numbers there who are going to want to take out Emmett. So I don't agree with the move to take out Emmett at all, which we can talk about. But if you want to do that, like, go to the brains, go to George and be like, you know, if he loses immunity, let's take our shot, which I wouldn't agree to just flip alone like that. But there are numbers there. Like, you could be included in a group and that group of brains does end up winning the day. You might not have been left out if you went to the whole group and try to be like super inclusive about like you and brains making a plan. But by trying to make a whole new random group of people that you are misreading, you have now triggered their plan against you and then triggered another plan that you are not part of because you haven't, you know, used the right numbers and read the situation well enough to know like who's going to actually want to take out Emmett. Most people in the game want to take out Emmett, except probably the two people you were speaking to in Flick and Gerald.
Completely, yeah. I don't know. It was a real, like, it was so awkward. I loved the awkwardness.
Yeah, it was incredibly awkward. I mean, other than the approach, say she does go to brain, say that the misread is a good read. Do you like the plan to take out Emmett here at all?
I can always see the point of taking out Emmett because an Emmett is, you know, he'd won, what, 3 out of 3 of the first challenges?
Yes.
He is someone that's hard to take a shot at. I mean, it depends who you are. But again, relatable Hayley, when she was like, I need him gone so I can win some necklaces. I was like that too. Like, if you're someone who wants wins on your resume at the end because it's impressive when it comes from someone that everyone doesn't expect to win challenges, and even someone like Danny, I think, is in that position, you want that big challenge beast gone. He's too good. He's too good. Yeah. I mean, not for Flick. I can't see why Flick would want Emmett gone. I can't see why Gerald would, but pretty much for anyone else I can.
See, I feel like Danny's in that boat where, like, as we're saying, it's such a chaotic game and, like, Emmett provides, like, a shield and so much stability. And at the time, it's only, I think, like, final 10. Like, surely there will be a shot at him. Like, it was very reminiscent of the Simon vote where Danny consistently is like, should I take out my number one ally, who is extremely threatening? And yes, there's the argument there, but like, she's trying to replace that relationship with other relationships that just do not come through for her because of the misread. So
yeah.
I just feel like that wasn't the time for me. Also, she's suggesting it before he's even lost immunity. Like, he's going into that immunity challenge as a safe bet, and then you've thrown out his name. Like, he could have easily won that challenge.
Yeah, I mean, she was trigger happy about it, but I can see why she saw him as a juicy target. Just not the time, not the place, not the read.
I feel like Danny should stop going on rewards. Like, they hype her up a little bit too much.
She did look, she was like swinging her beer, looking off into the distance. You could just see her, you know, picturing that, you know, the Emmett head on a platter, serving it
with
up
the chicken.
With some KFC on the side, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit too chicken drunk is what we were saying on Talking Tribal. But I just want Danny to be able to come back from a blindside that she's orchestrated, not blindsided herself this season, because that has not yet, you know, that's not happening so far.
Yeah, even the blindside that she actually pulled off, she was still blindsided.
Exactly. It was such a similar dynamic, which I thought was quite funny, but I mean, I don't think I was on board necessarily with the move at all, let alone like the approach, the timing, any of it. And I just felt like, even then, she on the bench, she's like talking to George and stuff. I'm like, who's big? And also, the KFC alliance really did lose all meaning. And like, George was in it. She's talking about it in front of Andrew. I think she was just like, everyone's on board to vote out Emmett. And it was like, well, what was the point of branding it the KFC alliance? People haven't had I guess George licked her pocket and then became part of the KFC alliance. Was that it?
Yeah, he got that little bit of chicken grease, and it was enough to bring him in.
Maybe that was it. But I mean, Emmett here was interesting for me. Because, like, it felt like Emmett will probably go home the second he's vulnerable and has one immunity. And he did survive at this one time where, like, he has the relationships with Flick and Gerald to tip him off, to play an idol on him, which I thought, you know, was better than I would have expected. Yes, he's depowered to his absolute minimum at this vote by losing Gerald, but, like, he's still there. And I thought, like, I was like, Emmett, why do you continue to be pretty good at this? What is happening? Stop.
I don't know. I feel like Emmett was so threatening, and not just from his challenge, you know, prowess, which was impressive, but because he is that person that brings people in, and he is good at making friends. You know, when he said, "I'm going to go off and make myself some new friends," and at that point, at 10, there were a lot of people around who were still, you know, the Lauras and Andrews, who I think were the kinds of players who were easily swayed by someone like Emmett. You know, they can be brought in just by relationships, just by this, you know, we're worthy of being here. You know, I think that those are people who could be brought in by someone like Emmett. So to me, he was threatening on so many levels. I definitely can see taking the shot.
Yeah, it's such a tough one for someone like Emmett, who just looks like a threat, behaves like a leader. Like, you have to be who you're going to be on Survivor, right? Like, I can't see any other world in which he plays the game in a different way, which is like, you know, pushing through a lot of the pre-merge with, especially the post-swap, with like a lot of power, coming in and like, again, having power, but like always being such a monumental threat physically, as you're saying, socially, as a leader. It's just really tough for him to ever really mitigate that, I feel.
Yeah, completely. For good reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still think, I mean, who else are Danny's allies? Like, Emmett is a day one ally for her. Anyway. I just feel like if you go on an all-star season with Danny and she asks to align with you, be very afraid. Because with like allies like Danny, who needs enemies, like those are the main people she's trying to blindside. Like, her main moves are against literally her like closest connections. Thank God Chelsea got Medivac. Who knows what would have happened to her had she stayed with Danny.
It feels like something you can learn in prison, isn't it? Keeping people closer.
Yeah. Okay, so I just feel like if Danny's ever on an all-star season, I think there's a pretty good shot. I just don't know who would ever want to align with her with this reputation of being like, she calls it the alpha killer, but she's also best friends with all the alphas. Like, be very afraid.
I don't know why I find her so entertaining. I just really, I enjoy, I think it's just her ballsiness. Like, when she won that fire challenge after the two boys were like, I'm going to get you with my fire, and I'm going to get you with my big fire. And Danny just quietly, you know, breezed through it. Something I love about her. I think she's great.
I also really enjoy her as a character. Again, we are able to see her as a character, and that's really nice and fun. But she's definitely bringing something interesting. Like, of course, I love as a TV viewer that she tried to take out Emmett, and I love that she tried to take out Simon and, you know, in ways did. That's incredible TV. She always blows the game right open and leaves, like, little cracks for other players, like a Haley and a George, to come into. And that is, like, really necessary for this chaotic structure. So she's been absolutely, like, completely relevant and necessary to, like, how interesting the game has been.
Completely. And I think, I mean, she's someone who clearly entertains all the options as well. She's never straight down the line. And I think even as a player, that's maybe that's why she reminds me of Sarah. I feel like if you were on the bottom, Danny's one person you're going to. Like, Danny is someone who will entertain your options.
Yeah, I mean, she is really interesting because it feels like nothing super negative has stuck against her. Like, you know, Emmett comes out of the Gerald vote and he's like set on George the whole week. That's like the biggest divide that I feel stuck through the week. Whereas like Danny, as we're saying, like back with Flick, back with Emmett by the end, like voting with them. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because they also came at her, but like she really did it first. Like she absolutely took the shot at them and like all is forgiven. Whereas like Emmett is so mad that George took out Gerald. And he got a vote from Danny, like, and he only voted for her because she'd come to him first, and they were, like, main allies, and they connect. And there has to be something really positive socially about all those players for doing that.
Definitely. I think, you know, you expect Danny to be a more emotional player than she actually is. She's very good at brushing it off and moving on.
Yeah, no, I don't feel she's, like, emotional at all. I feel like it's more like, it gets so unemotional. It's like, okay, I'm here, I'm with these people, I'm eating chicken, we're blindsiding my number one ally. Like, to be that detached from, like, being able to make that move without even, like, really being heartbroken over it, like, that's impressive. Like, Simon as well has been her number one, she's like, bye. Like, that's funny, like, that's funny to watch, and also interesting from a character perspective.
Yeah, I'm so here for Danny and Hayley to work together, and anything can happen at this point, so come on, let's see it. I want to see Danny and Hayley.
Very true, very possible, anything is possible for sure. Okay, let's move to the second vote, because we've asked, you know, a lot of, I think the two main questions we need to walk through are, why Kara of the four that were vulnerable, and why no split? Mm. Okay, which should we tackle first?
Will we go for why Kara?
Okay, so why do you think Kara, I mean, there's only four people who are vulnerable, we can talk about the twist, but why do you think Kara became like the unanimous vote here?
Because I don't know. I want to hear what you think. You're the oracle of answers for these kinds of things.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing all the time, but like, I feel like she seemed quite close to Emmett, and I feel like Emmett was their primary target. Like, once he's been weakened in the Gerald boot, but then he is immune, like, they're trying to weaken him, and they seemed really close. Like, Kara even says at a point, maybe in the final voting confessional that I watched on 10 Play, she's like, you've been a really good leader. Like, I think there was very much like a Braun sensibility about her that obviously Laura doesn't have, that obviously Wei doesn't have, and like, not even Danny has anymore, because she literally just voted against Emmett and the Braun. So if you're looking at weakening Emmett, Kara is your best bet.
So you think they went for Kara as a blow to Emmett?
I mean, a blow is like, you know, maybe a strong word, but like, there's only four people there. So if you're looking at who's really disparate from us as the brains, it's not Wei, it's not Laura. They're even trying to bring Danny in a little bit. Like, she seems more part of their group because she was left out of the obviously vote against herself by Braun. She's left out of the Gerald vote, but she's alone. So they like pick her up as a number. Whereas I think most of the brains who aren't George are like, well, Kara has some friends more than Danny, and she's not with us, which Wei and Laura are. So I do think it became difficult because only four people are vulnerable. Like, if Flick doesn't have A, her situation, and B, immunity, is she kind of suffering a similar fate? I think that's possible. But Gerald, I think, like, where there's only a few options and they're working more with the others, I feel like Kara was just really, really different and far away from what brains were doing. And she hadn't even been in the vote, you know, the time before. So that's what I'm saying. I think she just felt really, like, alienated from that group that were, like, making the decisions.
And you think the Brawns were okay with it because she wasn't critical to them and they wanted to...
Yes.
Get themselves in on, you know, open up their options next time. A bit of a show of faith by going with Kara.
Yeah, which is what Emmett says. He's like, I'm trying to, like, really, like, appeal to Andrew. And, like, I think at that point, they'd like to save Kara. I think Emmett seems quite upset that Kara's going to go, but they're like, well, we have no power. We just got voted, you know, in the minority into the last vote. And we're just trying to basically survive this to the point, like, I think they'd want to save Kara, but they can't. Like, Kara is like, I guess I'm going home. And Emmett's like, not home. Like, to hang out with Baden. So, like, they're like, we can't do anything. You know, they all kind of were like, there's only four people vulnerable, two of them are in the Brains Alliance, and Danny is not threatening at all and possibly a number for them. Like, what can we do, Kara? And they say she's been wishy-washy, so I think it was just done.
You don't think it was a shot against George?
I don't think so, because I think that the people leading it seemed like Andrew, you know, I think really Andrew, like, felt, like, very strategically relevant in that for me, more than usual. And I think they just worked with George. Like, at that point, they're not mad at George. Like, George just helped them and saved them. So I think at that point, it seemed like an Emmett thing to me.
But how can they be working with George and planning on working with George going forward and targeting Kara?
Maybe they just think that they're, like, every other person in the game who has, like, no real tie to each other, but in this one case, they're wrong. Because they say to George, they're like, we're voting on Kara. He's like, I'd rather not do that, but I'm like, if you guys are saying it, I will, because he knows he has the idol. Like, they do go to George, and they're like, maybe they don't know if he will vote for Kara, but think they have the votes anyway, but they're like going to him and saying, like, it's a Kara thing, which does seem completely wild to us as people who have watched this pair, like, be so closely linked through the whole game.
And fun, like, they've had so many idols blow back on their faces, all of them. Like, there's been a lot of idols blowing back on people to tell George, Kara's closest ally, that the vote is going on to her, and then not split the vote.
Yes. Yes. The lack of split is something we need to talk about. Piling all the votes on a person where there are idols all the time, where idols are being used by her and her allies, her ally being George, quite consistently. I mean, this was a decision. What did you make of this? You know, it's a ballsy decision not to split. What did you make of it?
Well, and I was thinking, you know, at Tribal Council, Hayley turns to George and is like, have you got something to save her, right? Like, was it that the people who would have thought to split were fine if it wasn't split, thinking that it was going to go on to Emmett, or, you know, thinking that it would go on one of the Braun?
Well, it could have only been her or Danny or Laura or Wei. But I think that the people who are thinking about splits, George and Hayley,
were immune.
Yeah, were immune, or, like, for George, like, obviously didn't want to split. So, like, it was, like, a neutrality possibly for Hayley, and then, like, an actively not wanting to split on her for George, to the point where, like, in the next episode, Hayley is saying George must have been part of it, because otherwise he would have tried to split, which is, like, I thought was a really good read. So I think that was it. I think there was, like, the twist, you know, obviously constricted options. It might have bred some complacency for some people. And also I think it just left people who were vulnerable, who weren't going to drive that. Like, then it really has to be Wei, Laura, Danny, Andrew, whose number one ally is Laura, who are like, absolutely not are we leaving, like, either ourselves or our closest allies so vulnerable to this. But, like, which of those people is doing that?
But interestingly, in this most recent episode, they go to Wei to tell them how to split the vote. As if Wei were like the, because I think Hayley's probably trying to hide her.
Yeah, she is.
And they're like, hey, Wei, explain to us how we should split the vote here. Why was Wei not explaining how they should split the vote there? She was in so much danger.
I know. She definitely should have been splitting. I also found the scene where they ask Wei how to split so funny. Andrew's like, how do we split this? I'm like, well, Andrew, it's 6-2. So what you do is you're going to get your hands out and you're going to start counting on your fingers, because there's 8 people and we can do that across 2 hands.
I've been teaching my daughter this stuff.
Yeah. I literally think your baby daughter could split better than some of these people, because, look,
Andrew's cute, though, with his, like, when he went up to the voting thingy and then he pulled out the shumbubba-dubba.
Yeah, I think...
Andrew, your recruit's showing.
I know, because, okay, Andrew and some of the other players probably didn't know what a split vote was when they started playing the game. And I was like, it's kind of ironic that they keep getting burned on the split. Like, they get burned in the middle episode for not splitting. They get burned on the last episode for splitting badly. And I'm like, you know what? It's not ironic. Like, it's completely earned. If they knew how to split a vote, they definitely would have been thinking, all right, like, let's throw a vote or two on someone else, like a Danny. Yes, you're working with her, like, tangentially, but surely you want to keep someone like Laura around, or save yourself if you're Wei and Laura. I think players like Hayley, had she been vulnerable, or George, had he been vulnerable, are 100% throwing a vote or two. You have, you know, enough numbers. Laura said in her exit interview with me that they didn't know that it was going to be unanimous. They didn't know exactly what numbers were there, but you should be reading that there are a lot of numbers there, like, hopefully reading that correctly. And even if there isn't, you've got, you know, 4 brains without George and Danny, that's 5, against possible 4 other numbers. Like, at the very least, throw one vote. Then if all other numbers come back against you, it's at least a 4-4-1 that you win on the revote. Like, I think someone like George is thinking about this. So surely, if it was someone else, if other people were vulnerable, a vote is getting thrown just to protect against Kara's one vote, maybe. Like, how is this not happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that with that twist, we ended up with such a unanimous vote. Like, it just seems, and I guess that's part of the interest of having people who don't really know the game playing it. Like, they're learning as they go along, but guys, we're pretty far in now, you know.
Like, yeah. You're still asking Wei how to split 6-2 is not a great endorsement for how learning the game on the fly is going.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then there is a rumor going around the internet that Andrew had a second vote. There's, like, a clip of him voting twice incorrectly on Kara's name. And that would make sense to me because it's like, why even care to win this immunity challenge where five people have won immunity? So they're like, if that's true, like even more so, like you got a bonus vote, like you throw it on Daddy. You want to save Lauren Wade?
You think all the votes are going on to Kara and you use an extra vote on Kara?
Yeah, that's literally what it looks like.
Ever at home? Oh my God.
I have no idea, but especially if you had a bonus vote, like surely you throw that on someone else just in case, like just in case it's going to be unanimous. Like even if that's the case and they had like 6-4 votes that they could have put, you know, like just throw a vote or two votes on Danny out of the six that you have, just Laura and Andrew's extra vote if he had one.
And it's not like, I mean, that's not coming back on you that hard because it's happened to Danny before.
Yeah, Danny's like, okay, I'd be surprised if I wasn't somewhat semi-blindsided coming out of a tribal council but still surviving. Like, that's what I expect at this point. So I just think maybe it's, you know, the people that were leading it, the people that were vulnerable. And that is an indictment on them because how did you just do a unanimous vote when there have been so many idols? Like, I understand that the twist usually constricted this. Like, I'm actually, like, not so surprised that it was a unanimous vote. Like, it restricted split options. It restricted any option. It was a constrictive twist. But, like, at the same time, if you're one of four people that are immune, that are not immune, that literally four people are vulnerable, surely you're thinking throw a vote.
I mean, I get that it's a restrictive twist, but I would have expected it to cause more desperation and paranoia, which I would have thought would have thrown more chaos. But actually it's gone the other way and it's made people more conservative, hasn't it? Like, it's made them want to keep it simple.
Yeah, I think people felt a little suffocated by it, which these twists can do. We've talked about that with a lot of big twists across South Africa and Australia recently. And I think they felt like, well, you know, if you're like Laura, for example, or Andrew, who's working with Laura, and Laura ends up obviously suffering for this, you're like, well, I'm not going to throw a vote on Wei, who I'm working with. Danny seems like a possible future ally, and that's it. Those are my only options, right? So, like, had George been also vulnerable, had Flick been also vulnerable, like, maybe they're like, okay, we'll throw a vote. But they're just thinking, okay, well, we're out of options. But you're not, because any option is better than you. Like, surely even to throw a vote on an ally or a potential ally is better than going home in a mass idol play where possibly someone had an extra vote that he just piled onto the unanimous vote and then there was no vote split. Like, I'm struggling with this one.
Yeah, it'd be so interesting to hear from someone like Hayley or George how they perceived what was happening. Obviously not from George. We heard from George. But, like, to hear the real behind the scenes of, like, did they think an idol play was possible here? By they, I mean Hayley. I want to hear what Hayley thinks. I know we're hearing so much, but, you know, the behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, George is obviously, like, he's the one who would have split. He and Hayley are the ones who would have split. George is thinking, like, thanks for not splitting, morons. I'll be using my idol now. Hayley is thinking, probably, what's the worst that can happen? Kara stays, Kara goes. I just came back. Like, I'm trying not to look shady. I'm immune at this tribal council. Like, you guys do what you want, and I'm coming back to camp tomorrow, and I bet I'll work it out, you know?
Yeah, completely.
She's not going to, like change the whole vote, try and explain what a split vote is to Andrew again to try and save someone. Like, everyone voted her out 2 episodes ago, so how much time and energy is she going to spend on, like, protective split votes when, like, who cares who goes? They voted her out 2 episodes ago. She's working with a lot of people since then, and, like, whatever happens, like, it's at least fractured, but also kind of positive. Like, does she have to expend that much energy to save one over the other?
I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's that twist. And, okay, a lot of people were angry about the twist, of course. I feel like I come in every week saying this. What did you think of this? Obviously, 5 out of 9 people are immune. Now, they all got to vote. It was a win for us all, but they were heavily immune due to a very physical challenge.
I actually enjoyed the challenge. I love the ones where they have to run up and down hills.
Could you, like, enjoy watching people suffer?
Winds at war style. Like, yeah, I just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And the twist, I hated the twist.
Mm.
I don't want to be a sad sack. There's enough sad around. But I just didn't get the point. Why do it?
Because it was a big, shocking TV moment.
It wasn't even big and shocking. Like, not... even the players went like, oh, like, what are we going for here, guys? What was the idea?
Imagine if you came on, you were like, I loved it. Be like, get out.
No, I just can't even, like, it's really hard to imagine how that makes things more interesting.
Yeah.
Other than to push people into paranoia. But, I mean, that's, like, deep enough in the game, everyone's paranoid.
other than to be able to say the most immunities of all time, you know, and like, I guess that's what, you know, the marketing plan, they didn't really say that, but.
Was it in the ads? I never seen the ads.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what they, I think they were just like, what are we going to do this whole week without a twist? What are we? South African Survivor? Like, we're not doing that, you know, like even South Africa's been doing a lot lately, but I mean, we said like, we feel it became quite constrictive. Again, so physical. For Brains versus Brawn, there's a lot of emphasis on the physical and immunity. Can we have, like, the other side of that? It's literally a binary you've presented where you are very much skewing it to one side.
I mean, where do you think we are? Like, of course, this is Australia.
Yeah. I don't know.
We do nothing.
I feel like with this twist, I want to say I feel a little dead inside. Maybe that's what it is, because I was like, it's clearly bad. I mean, five people are immune. This is completely ridiculous. Even the puzzle was like a guess and check kind of puzzle where it was just time. So, like, if you ran fast, you could never get stumped on it, really. Like, it really was about running fast, which is not why I watched Survivor personally. I think I just felt like, at least you all can vote. It's not as bad. I felt very emotionally drained from the episode because of the Flick stuff, which we'll talk about. But I was just like, okay, can we just get out of the semi unscathed? And I felt like at least we got a fairly even split of like a middle person-ish in like the Kara George faction, an outsider in Danny, two people in the majority in Laura and Wei who were vulnerable. It felt like, okay, if Emmett had just won immunity, this might have been a similar thing. Like maybe there would have been other split options in George and Flick that would have changed it a little bit. But for me, like that's what made it more limited. But at least I was like, okay, we can get like somewhat of like a fairly authentic vote through this extreme restriction. It's interesting because when you win immunity, like even Haley says in this last episode, like it empowers you to a degree because you're like the only one who's safe. Whereas like when five people were safe, I do think it bred that complacency. Like Emmett's using it to get close to Andrew and stuff and trying to build some trust and relationships. And I get that. But had he had more options and it just like won immunity, maybe he's making a big swing there to save Kara. Like maybe something else is happening. But when the options are so limited, you have to be like, well, like, I'm safe, I'm not. Even, like, as we're saying, someone like Haley, it's like, we'll just kind of get through this, and there's really not a lot we can do. So I don't know why they keep putting these twists in that are, like, again, it's like, it doesn't give options, it just limits them.
Yeah, it just took wind out of a lot of sails, didn't it? Like, it removed the stakes for too many people, put the pressure on people, like you said, it was interesting targets, but there were also the people who were not going to be as creative about removing the target from themselves. And yeah, let's move on from the twist.
Well, I do think, like, I agree. I mean, I do think that the fun stuff about it, like, what made me okay with it is, like, hey, Laura goes here and Kara gets unanimous votes. And if there are two people who are going to suffer for the twist, like, they're both on borrowed time. They've both been saved by twist. And I just love how connected they are to each other through this whole game. Like, they're like mirror versions of each other. Like, they both attempted to accidentally self-sacrifice, like Laura with Rachel, Kara with George, and both didn't work in different ways. They're both still there. They've both been voted out and saved by twists. Now, because Kara was being saved by the idol, they've both been voted by a majority and saved by an idol by another person. Obviously, Kara riding Laura is like a hilarious running theme of the season. So like the fact that this like twisty, idly moment ties them again, and George saves Kara again for like another full circle moment. I was like, if you're ever not going to be mad at a twist because we've twisted ourselves into such a pretzel that at this point, like, neither of them should really be there anyway. So just, like, accept that this has happened. Like, this was the moment where we, like, we peaked twisted and now we're, like, at a normal level again.
Yeah. We've reached equilibrium, which was, I think, something that got thrown out there in a weird way in the season. Someone was talking about equilibrium. I was like, that's not what equilibrium is. No. Remember this? I was just thinking of it then. And I was like, oh, like for Brains versus Brawn, someone should explain equilibrium.
Should first explain what a split vote is. Like, so, this is Brains versus Brawn. Like, it should be the minor math first before we get into, like, larger concepts, probably.
Fair. Well, okay.
For this vote, we also have to talk about George. We have to talk about the idol he found and that he chooses to save Kara here, which again, like, I think doing big, great things with the little faults, maybe the execution that puts the target directly on them. Like, what did you think of this move?
I thought it was an interesting idol to put into the game, clean hands idol. But I don't know in what world George thought that he could get away with playing it and have no one know who played it.
Yeah, Kara's shocked face was on point. Like, what was he thinking?
It was kind of cute the way that she was like, what? It's like, oh, why didn't at least he word her up to be like, ha-ha. You know, I'm sure she would have gone along with it. Why keep her in the dark?
I am confused about it. Like, I mean, he has to save her. I do believe that to be true. Like, she is his number one ally. They are the closest connection in the game. She saved him. She is someone who will vote for him anytime he wants with her. Like, she will vote with him.
Yeah.
He absolutely needs her. So I think to find, you know, if he alienated her at all in the last vote, to find an idol and to save her with an idol, okay, great. You needed to do that. You covered for that. But, like, yeah. I can't understand why he doesn't tell Kara the plan beforehand. Even if he, like, because Nick was saying, you want to be the cool one to, like, he was saying on Talking Tribal, like, you want to be the cool one to put the key in the thing, and I get that. But just tell her, I'm doing this, I'm playing the idol. And I think maybe 20 to 30% he feels he can't trust Kara with the plan, which surely she's not that much of a liability. Like, I watched the Dainey thing too, but if she's that much of a liability, that seems like a lot of work for George. But then I think, like, it's like 70, 80%. Like, this is an anonymous idol. What's the point of telling her? That just makes it a normal idol. Like, just like he wanted to do this fun anonymous thing where she doesn't even know who saved her. Like, what a TV moment. I think he just got, like, blinded by, like, the sneakiness when, like, it didn't have to be that sneaky.
The fact that he put his vote on Kara and played the idol for her was, I mean, that's pure TV, isn't it? Like, if he just wanted to end his move, he didn't need to do the whole whispering, like, making it a sneaky last-minute thing to put the vote on Laura. He could have had his own agency in that.
Yeah, I mean, George loves doing that. This is not the first time. He voted for Laura last week in the Keds vote and was like, you're not going home. I'm like, George is obsessed with playing the double agent and voting out the person who he's actually saving, like, voting for the person who he knows is staying because he saved them himself.
And I thought it was funny when you saw them talking at camp and they're like, we'll have to talk at Tribal, right? I'm like, no.
Talk right now.
You're like, right, just talk now. They're not going to drag you off to Tribal. They're probably like, go back and eat some rice. Interesting. I sort of played around with the thought of, like, you know, would that have been an opportunity to force people to break a tie? You know, he and Kara could have forced a tie on someone, but I think there was no sort of fracture to cause by doing that, and then he risks them actually ending up at Rocks or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what would have happened with them being at Rocks considering five people were immune. Like, are they immune through Rocks as well? I'm not 100% sure. I think, like, at that point, he's got his target on Laura, so he seems to really want Laura to go. Like, he doesn't seem to want to leave it to other people. Like, he directly wants it to be his, like, least close relationship in Laura. He says he doesn't want Way to go. She does end up voting with him in the next episode. He seems to be trying to work out something with Danny. So, like, he wants the power in that way, which is something I understand, rather than, you know, trying. Like, does it need to be more fractured? It could not be more fractured.
I liked the idea of the mechanics of that, of forcing a fracture. I always think that's quite, like, have the opportunity to force a majority to choose one of their own. I always enjoy that, but it just wasn't the situation with the people who were vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we spoke about literally last week on Survivor South Africa. It's always that pro-con of, do you want to force people, you know, put two votes on someone and force people to choose and then, like, watch the fallout? Or do you want complete power with an idol play where you decide who goes home and he decided he wanted the power? So I don't begrudge that.
Yeah, and especially in this situation where clearly I think Laura was the right choice for him. And he said it himself, he's like, I have no relationship with Laura.
Mm.
She's not coming to me.
Yeah.
No good for my game. As opposed to Kara, who is his crucial number one ally. Like, he can't afford to mess around with that, really.
Yeah, or Wade and Danny, who seem to have some connective tissue. So I do get it. And what you're saying about George voting the TV moment of voting for the person that he's saving or that he knows is staying, like, I don't think this had ever happened roughly 2 years ago, and then it's happened so much since. Like, Kelly in Island of the Idols does it with Jack, Dave did it in All Stars with Daisy, Sandra does it with Denise, that didn't go well, and George has now done it multiple times. I don't think it had happened before these few votes, and now it's like a staple of modern Survivor.
Yeah, what's the name for this? Like, you know, talk about all these classic Survivor moves. What do you call doing that?
When you vote for someone that you know is staying?
Mm.
I don't know. It needs a cool name, doesn't it? Where is Mike Bloom when you need him?
It's a mole vote because you're trying to stick with the people that you're voting with, or pretend you're sticking with the people you're voting with.
Yeah, I mean, because it's more than just double agent. Like, it's more explicit than that. I don't mind mole vote.
Yeah, I kind of like mole vote.
It definitely needs a name because it's now happening, like, roughly every season. Like, literally, since season 39. It happened in season 39, 40, yeah. All Stars, here multiple times. Like, it is now a staple. So, yeah, the mole vote. We got it.
Like,
Yeah, so anyway, this sloppy vote, this sloppy execution was not great in terms of, you know, how it goes for George, and then he has to cover for it, but I do enjoy that he did save Kara. He absolutely had to do that. So I guess the last thing that I need to get your take on for this vote is your general thoughts on this anonymous idol.
I like the anonymous idol. I think it's cool. I think it's got, you know, it was a little bit, like we were just saying there, hamstrung by being played in a twist episode. I don't think that, you know, George sort of made it work for TV. He really just needed a regular idol, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Would have been less trouble after. But I like I think it's got promise to be used for more mole votes in the future.
Yeah, I mean, the anonymous idol I found really fun because it was barely more than a regular idol. And I was like, yes, because like, I think people were really worried after the epic first photo of the week. And then it was like the biggest power next time. They were like, no. And it wasn't. It was just like a regular idol that was a little.
Yeah, it wasn't overpowered. Yeah,
not at all. I mean, if anything, I don't think it's as powerful as people even realize. Like, I was talking to my brother about this, and he always has thoughts on the twist and stuff. And he was saying, like, you can always play an idol anonymously. Like, if George gives, if George gives the idol to Kara before Tribal Council, like, he secretly played it on her and no one would know. Like, is it that different to that?
Not at all. I mean, I guess it, like, I feel like passing your idol to someone else is probably an uncomfortable thing to do, especially pre-tribal. You never know what's going to happen.
That's true.
Mostly, not that much changes at tribal, but, like, it probably feels a little bit looser taking it out of your own pocket and giving it to someone else, not knowing what they're going to do with it, compared to putting it in yourself. There's also, it takes away the opportunity to do that thing of, you know, I'm going to play it on and, like, watching people's faces.
Yes.
So in that way, it's actually probably slightly less powerful. But I do think that, you know, it's an interesting concept in terms of how you claim something as your move or not, who you involve in it, and then, yeah, whether you can actually maintain a mole vote or not. It's interesting, I think.
I love that we're really making mole vote a thing.
I keep using it, just hammer it home.
Yeah, I think that, like, it is that timing thing that you're talking about. It's that you, like, usually play and save someone after the votes are cast and before they're read. Now you're playing it before, like, during while the votes are cast, and it's saving someone during when the votes are read. So, like, one of the major things that my brother was saying was, like, it can really affect the order of operations. It can prevent idol chains. Like, if Kelly Wentworth has his idol at the final six of Cambodia, Jeremy goes home. Because she stands up, she plays her idol, and he's like, nope, and it goes to 0-0. Like, he can't do that if it's coming out of the urn.
Yeah. I mean, Jason, isn't it? Jason Gates always with the brain power. Totally agree. Yeah, that's crucial.
Yeah.
Yeah, it stops an idol chain. Why do you think of that?
Which is concerning because it's definitely not that's not what they are intending. And it, like, really does change things, I think, into what you're saying. Like, you can't read it. Like, everything that's important about it is in the timing. Like, yes, passing your idol before, there's a timing thing with that that makes it different. Playing it while you can read faces, a timing thing after the votes are cast. And yeah, the order of operations and idol chains and advantage get in, like, it's the power of surprise and secrecy that it happens while the votes are read. Like, that to me is its real main power rather than just, like, the, I don't know, of it.
Yeah, I'm actually even thinking, you know, even passing your idol pre-tribal is risky in that it gives the person you passed it to a bargaining chip as well. You know, how much do you trust them to not go and use that to make sure that the votes are not on them anyway? Mm. Is that coming back to you? When Tarzan gave me his idol, I 100% tried to use that to put the votes on him and be able to save my idol. Like, it's a risky thing to give away that safety rather than playing it for somebody and having that power in your own hands.
But how far before tribal did he give it to you?
Tarzan?
Yeah.
Really thinking back now, it was a fair time. I had ages still.
Well, maybe that was his mistake. Like, maybe he should have given it to you, like, as you're leaving for tribal council, not, like, giving you a day to, like, cause havoc with it.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, no, I had, like, still the rest of the day. But I don't know. I think it feels loose and floppy to me, passing someone your idol.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, with George and Kara, surely there's, like, a lot of trust there, and he could do it, like, right at the end. But I do think there's interesting timing things happening, and I think it does encourage someone like a George or, like, these big game players to be, like, sneaky for the sake of it, which is a large part of the fun. Like, there might be diminishing returns if they keep doing it, but, like, there is something fun about playing this anonymous idol for the first time and it being this weird different thing. Like, I do think that really encouraged him to not clue Kara in. Had it been a regular idol, I think he would have been like, I'm playing an idol in you tonight, or you're playing an idol in yourself, or whatever's happening, like, I'm saving you tonight. But, like, I think that the idea of being that sneaky and it's in the urn and no one will know except him, I think that encouraged him to play almost, like, to his own detriment because he was too sneaky, and that, like, ratted him out for the next vote. But, like, you get these fun players, like someone like a Luke or someone, like, they're definitely going to do that for the TV moment, and, like, it's there for the TV moment.
Yeah, and his face was so gold the whole time. He was, like, trying not to grin like a little Cheshire cat. Do you know what else was really cute about this idol? Was JLP pulling it out and making a little surprise face.
I totally agree. He was like, well, what is this?
Okay.
There was a lot of, like, George was trying to, like, pull Kara along with him after that. He was like, great play, Kara. And she's like, I didn't play. He's like,
I know.
Great play.
Tell me
play.
Next time you find something, Kara.
Yeah. Tell me next time you find something. And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking. Why are you kicking me? Like,
George, what?
Yeah.
It's like when they, do you remember when George and Kara were the, like, surprise guests at that tribal, and Maiden was, like, whispering to them what to do, and Kara was like, sorry, who are we splitting the vote on, though?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the edit or if it's legitimate, but it concerns me greatly that George didn't feel he could tell her about this. I hope it was a TV thing, because if not, I have extreme and legitimate concerns about Kara's role as a player and an ally that she can't be told. Simple plan. So, I mean, look, it made for a fun moment now. I don't know that they'll do it again, but I think they want, I think there's a reason that in all the think tanks we've ever done, I don't think this has ever come up. It's very, like, out of left field. I don't know that it adds a lot, which, as I said, is great because they've been adding too much, but, like, it created a fun TV moment here, and if they do it again, maybe, like, other super fans will think about how, like, timing is really, like, the essence of this advantage, and maybe there's, like, something to be done with that.
Yeah, I like it. I'm a why not.
Yeah, why not? That's true. It didn't break the game. They all got to vote, didn't they? Like, that's my new, I'm telling you, that's my new bar, where I'm like, well, as long as they all got to vote, I'm fine. That's all I care about.
They all got to vote. JLP made a cute face. Let's move on.
Yeah, I agree. Well, as we said, the execution of this and the fact that everyone knew that George had done it, as much as he, like, you know, was elbowing Kara to get with the plan, it made it a difficult one for him in the next episode. And Haley and Wei become the swing votes. It's like there's a really big, like, push to George and Kara and Brains and Braun finally uniting against the people who've been really neither Brains or Braun the whole time. And Haley and Wei have this decision of which side to go with. So did you like their decision of eventually going with George and Kara?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's interesting that Haley saw herself as fifth in that group. I think she was probably fourth. I think Danny was fifth. But she has a lot more agency and power within that four, if they are to keep voting together, than she would have on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she's maybe in a majority compared to, like, definitely in a scary majority with George and Kara. But, like, as long as you're aware of that and you just keep looking out for it, like, there's some numbers there for you. And, like, even beyond just the numbers, because as we said, the numbers are probably falling apart, like, 5 minutes after tribal council. But even just, like, looking at, like, from a jury perspective, from a physical perspective, like, Emmett's offering her, like, these big, I think, jury threats. Someone like Flick, someone like Emmett himself, with Haley there. Andrew's a huge physical threat, obviously, so is Emmett, so is Flick. Like, to go to the end with the strong people, as she's saying, like, that's not so fun for her. Like, she wants to win immunity challenges.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that, and I like that she's saying that, because it's not a super fanny thing to be like, I actually really want to win immunity. Like, you know, we're often a bit like a challenge schmellenge. It's all about the strategy and social game. But I do think, especially for someone who's a Brain, who's a smaller woman, that winning those necklaces wins you a lot of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something you can, particularly if people are not looking at you as a challenge threat. And weirdly, they're not with Hayley. Like, when they're listing the challenge threats, and they do it to her face, and her face is like, have you seen me?
Have you seen what I've been doing?
Emmett and Andrew, and she's like, look at me. Count my abs. Yeah, I think that they're not seeing her as a challenge threat, and that it is going to be impressive when she can win them. So, yeah, I think that group's good for her.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely, like, needs to possibly pull back some respect after being voted out. And it is about protection, because she is still a huge threat. Like, it's something I said with Luke, and it's not a super fanny thing to be like, challenges are important. But, like, when you're a big game player, which Haley absolutely has been, when you're, like, an alpha type player making moves, possibly being voted out for them, coming back, like, you need some protection. And with Luke in 2019, I was like, he got himself as such a huge threat to Final Seven, and now he needs to win out. And that is a really legitimate strategy in this, like, exceptionally long game of Australian Survivor. And her kind of knowing if she's going to get to possibly a final two or three, which is something we could talk about, but, like, get through these last votes with pure rounds that the US doesn't have, without fire at four that we're hoping they don't do. Like, yeah. You got to win some challenges. Like, you really do need protection down the stretch when there are smaller numbers and you have a target on your back.
Yeah. And I mean, like, Emmett's describing that group of five to her, where there's three brawn, right? Three brawn, two brain. She's unlikely to win out against Emmett. How does she get herself to the end in that group?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great pitch from Emmett, being like, go with all the strongest people and then we'll fight it out physically. Like, it's not a deal I would really want to take. And I feel like it really pushed her away, because we see that conversation where she and Wei are talking. She does seem much more like, let's vote out Emmett. And Wei seems more like, doesn't want to work with George, which I feel like I've seen this film before. And then I feel like for Emmett to come in and offer her, like, a bad deal, and to offer her for Wei a really bad deal where Wei's not even a part of that, like, she can go back to Wei and be like, you're literally not even part of the bad deal I was offered. Like, we have to vote out Emmett now.
Yeah, completely. It's actually probably the biggest misstep that we've seen from Emma in a long time, is describing this to Hayley in that way. Like, he almost needed to be like, we'll stay as voting blocks. Let's just get rid of George, who's throwing this chaos into the game. And then, you know, you've got your people here, I've got my people, and we'll move forward. But, like, I think focusing too far into the future there with Hayley was a bad move for him.
Yeah, he should have read that Hayley wouldn't want to do that, because it is, as we're saying, like, a logically bad plan. And that, like, you know, it's a good plan for him. That's why he's liking it. He's like, let's all go with the physical threats. Like, you as peak alpha physical threat, like, that's a great plan for you. Like, you might win out, even with, like, the best other contenders there with you, and you'll have protection and shields, and you'll have also a lot of your own allies and Flick and Andrew and people you've been working with. Like, why would Hayley want to go with that? So I feel like he wasn't thinking from her perspective of, like, why would she want to go with that? And maybe she just did a good enough job of being, like, so anti-George and Kara that he was like, it's not even really about that. I'm giving some, like, medium to long-term plans. But for the short term, we're all definitely going anti-George, because that's been, like, such a strong sentiment in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, it was the right move for Emmett, in that that was the right direction for him to go. I just think he needed to have a different front for Hayley as to how they were going to, why they were going that way.
Yes, I would agree. And another reason that Emmett goes home, because they split the vote so badly. Just again, something that, it just, the fact that it would screw someone like Andrew over twice in two votes is hilarious to me, because it feels like for us, we see that he, like, just started playing and it's going, like, very poorly. But, like, again, like, to have to ask Wei was hilarious. But even, like, if someone just had the foresight to kind of know the strategy, even, like, an Emmett or an Andrew or anyone in that group who comes back from this car award that they've all been on, it's, like, a pretty strong four. And Andrew seems to trust Wei and Hayley, obviously erroneously, but, like, he seems to have trust there. But that four is so strong. Like, in what world do you, A, need to ask how to split a vote? And also, aren't you saying, okay, guys, we're splitting the vote 4-2-2, our four are like, on George. Our four who are at the Roared, who are, like, such a strong block, who are, like, clearly immovable. We're putting a plurality of 4 of 8 on George, and you guys are splitting 2 on Kara, and you depower those possible swing votes, which obviously was being misread, but they are swing votes. Like, Emmett's trying to pull Hayley over, but he's also put her on the powerful George vote. No, you put your four block on the George vote, and then they can't flip because they have nowhere to move, and you've, like, absolutely just cornered them into this position.
Yeah, look, I'm allowed to laugh at this because I was burned by it myself. It matters who goes where on the split. Can't say it enough.
Mm. And it's being used as well by Wei and Hayley.
Yeah, and Hayley, God, love Hayley, was so deliberate about it, wasn't she? She's like, I want to write down George's name.
I really want to vote down George's name, just because I'm, like, kind of a vengeful player, not because it would give me, like, a lot more strategic agency in this vote. It's not really about that. And Wei, I think, as well, like, I don't know how much is coming from her, but, like, I think even the fact that they could look to her as, like, a little bit of, you know, someone teaching them what a split vote is, but, like, as someone who's leading this in a way, like, it gives her the power to be like, all right, well, it's random, or it's more diverse in that way, and that gives them that power. And they both very much acknowledge it when they're talking, that they could go either way because of the way the split has gone. And I think if they weren't looking to weigh themselves, or if they were leading it in someone like an Andrew and an Emmett, then they wouldn't have given them that power. So it's, like, credit to Hayley for pushing to want George. It's credit to Wei to even being looked at in that way, that they can make this a more interesting split vote for themselves due to, like, their own good gameplay and due to, like, mistakes that are being made by the other members of the alliance.
Yeah, good positioning by them.
Very much so. So Danny's reward choice, which I want to talk about. Like, she, I liked it at first. I, you know, she has so many relationships to reconcile, but in hindsight, they were the four left out of the vote. So, like, how do you look at that choice now?
I think they were the right people for her to bring. I think Flick was a no-brainer. She needed to be taken.
Yes.
And I mean, who else? Like, I'd love
Emma
to see
and Andrew. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking about who else would have been better to take. Like, if I were Danny, it's really hard for me to be Danny, though. I think she was right in taking them, at least in that they did then stick together. Like, she'd been pretty left out previously, and now she's got at least these four people who are clearly voting with her. So she read that right.
Mm. I mean, it's like it's a win and it's a loss. Like, they all vote with her, but they also all lose the vote, you know? Like, so I mean, I liked it at the time because I'm like, she's reconciling with Flick and with Emmett and bringing Andrew in. But I think possibly with the benefit of hindsight, I don't know if it's results-oriented, but I don't know that you need Emmett. Like, he's so desperate anyway, and he's going where Flick does, and he and George are just oil and water. Like, if you take away Ara Haley and leave Emmett and George back at camp, like, you know nothing is happening with the four back at camp, because you are leaving four people together, four people who eventually get on the same page. Like, I think you have to leave people who will never get on the same page, and then you're coming back with your strong four, hopefully, and then other people who are just not a block against you. So I think in hindsight, like, I get what she was going with, and I definitely think she's done a good job since that first vote of, like, reconciling relationships, much like the Simon vote. It's quite similar to me in, like, okay, that didn't go so well, but then she was much more in Braun than I thought she would be last week, and I gave her chizzy votes for it. And, like, through this week as well, reconciling those relationships, recreating something, I thought was really good, but I just think possibly those four that she left did end up winning the vote. Like, that's not a great look in the end.
I don't think that's her fault, though. I mean, I think that it was partly Emmett's cell that was the problem with Haley and Wei.
True.
I don't think that bringing Haley would make any difference to what Haley did. Just don't think she's that kind of player. Maybe including Wei would have been important, because Wei doesn't want to work with George and Kara. I guess that, and I mean, maybe that was, I don't know if she was very aware of that, but maybe that was the thought of leaving Wei with George and Kara, is that she clearly doesn't want to work with them. She's clearly burnt bridges before with George. Never see Wei and Kara in the same scene. No idea what they think about each other.
They both don't get confessionals. How would we know?
Exactly. No idea what they think. But, yeah, I don't think it would have made a big difference, to be honest. Maybe bringing Wei instead of Emmett.
I don't know that it necessarily changes things. I don't think that I'd call it her fault, but there's possibly, like, something to prevent here. And I do agree. It's probably a Wei thing, because Haley doesn't necessarily need the time or the relationships. Like, she's making the move she's going to make based on the deals she's presented with. But, like, Wei might care about this type of thing. She seems to really care about, like, bonding with people, which is important. You know, even just, like, turning against George earlier in the season, it was like, he's treating me badly, other people may be treating me better. Even with worse deals, like, she cared about those relationships. I don't know how much that carries that much further down the season, but I think there are possibly bridges that could have been built through that, and, you know, not leaving her necessarily with Kara and George might have been a good thing.
I do feel like what we see of Wei is that she wants to go with the majority. She's a real, I think she's a clever woman, and she's able to see the dynamics, but she just seems to want to move with a large group, don't you think?
I mean, she literally has, and even in this vote, as we're saying, like, she seemed more that she wanted to go with voting out George, and that would have been with a majority that she was more on the bottom of than Haley, who wanted to flip. And it's something we've seen before. Like, yeah, I don't think that she needs to, like, put herself in great with the numbers. I think she's, like, she seems like more of a vibe type of player, where she, like, just enjoys this more, and she doesn't enjoy the vibe of George and hasn't for a long time, and is, like, happy to put herself more on the bottom just to not be around that. And I think there's, like, there's something there. There's something to playing the game with people you're comfortable with that you're not always nervous of playing with, which she clearly is with George. But I think, like, when push comes to shove, like, you want good numbers, especially when you're going into what will be a final seven. Like, you don't want to be six in that.
Yeah. And I think, like, maybe we're just reading into too much of what Wei is not saying, but she seems like someone who really likes predictability and stability. And that's, like, the anti-George.
Yes. In hindsight, hilarious that they were so linked so early. They are, like, such opposite people. They were, like, not meant to be allies.
But I think that's exactly what Wei was thinking back then when she was like, how am I with you right now? Like, this is not me. Take me to Laura. Take me to, like, you know, the Georgia, like these logical, cool-headed people. And instead she's with George as he, like, commando crawls through the grass.
Yeah. Just because they were both outsiders, but, like, such different outsiders for such different reasons. Like, just because, you know, it's not like just because they had the same enemies and not necessarily should have been friends. I mean, George, I think, really felt it, but I think, like, their really tenuous connection throughout the season is such an interesting thread to try and half follow with zero confessionals from Wei. But the point that, like, they're so connected and then she turns on him and they've come back now, and now she's, her decision here to go with Haley, like, saves his life in the game again.
Yeah.
Again, after the Joey vote. And that is just ridiculous to me for a lot of really interesting story reasons.
And I think a lot of times, because we only hear things from George, but George will often mention Wei as someone who's important to his game. Like, he'll be like, I don't want to lose Wei. Wei is important to me. And Wei's like, ugh, no, George.
Yeah. He does it at the carver. Like, she wants to vote for Wei. Yeah. And he's like, Laura. Like, the fact that they save possibly each other. I mean, he would have been the one to play the idol and destroy Wei. But he also saves her from himself. And they do it within the space of two episodes. Like, George and Wei is such an interesting relationship. And I wish we could get more from Wei, because that dynamic is fascinating to me. And of course we get it from the George side, but, like, we haven't heard from Wei in several episodes. She's been strategically key, and from a story perspective, it's just so interesting for such a long-term relationship in this game.
Yeah, it's a great long arc. Unfortunately, I think when we actually see it, it's going to be, you know, we might get a Wei package, and you know what the Wei package would mean.
That she's going home in 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, like, Tara and Peter from your season, where it was like, that was such an interesting relationship. And if you track the votes, they were, like, together and apart, and they both end up in the top three. And we just heard so little from Peter that I'm like, this could have been even more interesting from a character perspective. And yeah. I think it's interesting to me. It's similar in that way that I feel like I'm saying Wei a lot, you know, when because, you know, it's just a difficult one. But she, like, I think that we could have really gotten a lot of juice from that story. And yeah. In two episodes where George again saves her and she saves him, and how relevant that is to so much of the season, we don't even hear from her. And that is bad production.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I know that it's Australian Survivor and they need to explain everything, you know, 20 times in case you were doing something else. And, you know, you might have forgotten what we just told you, and they don't leave space for that sort of complex storytelling. But give us the secret scenes, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, Gerald got the secret scenes, which I don't think, I mean, I've spoken a little bit to Gerald over the last few days about his edit and how kind of heartbreaking it was, which I thought was just tragic, you know, that his whole story got left on the cutting room floor. And he says, you know, not just for him, obviously for a lot of different people. And I can't imagine what that would be like as a player to have your whole story erased.
Yeah.
And to think it's really important, and for it to be really important to you and possibly to the dynamics of the game, and for it to just not be important to the editors at all and doesn't get told. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what you'll actually remember and be able to show people, isn't it? Like, I know that when I went out there, I really went with the mindset of, like, I don't care about the TV product. I want to play the game and win the game. And I have a new appreciation for it now, having lived it, that, you know, what you get to see back at home is what you get to share with people. And it sucks to not have that.
Yeah. And it probably just diminishes your memory of it to a degree. And, like, yeah, possibly just reduces the way that you look at your own experience. And I know that the big question mark we always get each time is, like, well, some of these people don't seem like they deserve screen time, because I always say, like, if they're worth casting, they're worth showing, tell us a little bit of the story. But, like, it probably is a bit of a split. Some of these people maybe aren't great casting, and some of them are and are getting a bad edit, but, like, either way, that's on production. Cast better, edit better, like, give us a freaking amazing cast. And they've done it before. Your 2017 cast is one of my favorite movie casts of all time. 24 people, where I think most were, like, absolutely stellar hits. And then, like, do that great casting, because so many people want to get on. And then show us, not even, it's not, you know, it doesn't have to be fair. It's not about being fair, but it's just about us as the viewer understanding, like, trying to come onto this podcast and talk through Wei's storyline and her decisions and not hearing from her. Like, it's hard to analyze. And there's so much time. Like, I know we're preaching to the choir. I know it's been said 100 million times about this, but it is a little bit sad, isn't it, that you know, it gets so much gets left on the cutting room floor, and a lot is repeated, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, and it's really no hate on the people who are being shown a lot. They're great TV.
Yeah.
Like, got some really, really interesting, great characters, and I still want to hear more from them. Like, I'm loving hearing from Hayley and George and Annette and Danny, like really interesting people. It's just, you shouldn't be sitting there thinking, but what does Gerald think? Like, if that, when you're watching the show, it comes across your mind, we've gone too far, haven't we?
Yeah. And also we are, like, as super fans, and they wouldn't care about this, but we're, like, analyzing the edit. And someone like Gerald, I said to my brother a while ago, I'm like, you know, I think through the swap, I'm like, Gerald could be a legitimate winner contender. Like, he seemed like he had a really good voting record for the chaos that is this season. He was in power pre-swap, post-swap, in the merge, which is impressive, again, in the season. Not a lot of people can say that. And he's just not a winner contender because he has no edit. You know, even, like, my brother was, like, swearing the whole time. He's like, Emmett can't even win. He didn't get a confessional in the first episode. Now, I don't know if I, like, 100% buy that, but, like, yeah, I mean, from edgy readers and people who are trying to read the edit a little bit, it rules people out in a way that is unfortunate and uncomfortable. And, like, try and explain edgic to some of the editors in production. They'll probably be like, what is that? Stop it. Yeah. We don't, this is why we don't like you guys. But, like, it does do that. And we're trying to, like, watch it and count people in.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that when people are completely invisible.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't think you go on with any, like, right as to how your story is going to be told. Everyone goes on there knowing that you can't control that. But I do think that, at least understanding a little bit about who people are, even if it's not their position in the game, just who they are, is enough to ask.
Yeah. From a viewer perspective, even if it's not about doing right by the contestants, because we look at this final seven, can Flick win? I think in terms of the game, yes, definitely. I mean, anyone can win at a final seven with a possible final two in Australian Survivor from a game perspective. But, like, you know, we've seen, like, final two results that are crazy. So, like, anyone has a chance. But, like, from the edit, can Flick win? Can Kara win from the edit? Andrew? Way? That's four of the final seven. Are we counting those people in as possibilities?
Definitely Kara could be a runner-up, couldn't she?
I mean, I think that's where it's going. Possibly from a game perspective, Kara's not in a great position. But, like, all the other people, Andrew, like, we haven't seen a lot from him. Way gets a lot of credit at Jury Villa. Emmett says that Wei inspires him. Laura thought that Wei was the one who played the idol. She's like a silent assassin. Like, obviously she was wrong about it, but, like, she thinks that. That's the Wei that we see, that she's seen. Like, she should be a contender.
Like, she's obviously seen as a strategic threat.
I agree. I mean, but, like, she has, I think, 12 confessionals. Like, we can't possibly consider her as even a possible remote winner contender, surely, going forward. I hope I'm not, like, spoiling anyone on this. Like, surely 12 confessionals and 18 episodes is, like, Wei's done. But why? Like, she, from a game perspective, I don't think that she is.
Yeah, it'd be great to know why. I think, you know, on the edit, that, like, even if we aren't getting Andrew's game perspective all the time, because now I know that he calls the voting, you know, and the voting thingy or whatever he said, like, give us the character moments from Andrew then, when they've had a reward and they're like, wow, that was a reward. Like, let's hear it from Andrew, not from George. And then George can explain the split vote.
Yeah, exactly, because we can't go to Andrew for that. I do feel bad that we're, like, ending on this editing note, because we were really high on the week and then we came back to, like, what are you doing, edit? Which is not my intention.
No, and I don't want to let go either of the fact that I'm really just enjoying watching this. It's a really nice part of my week. It's a lot of my week. Like, there's a lot of it.
It's a lot.
But I really am enjoying it. I think it's a great product. I think that if you remember, like, when 2016 Australian Survivor came out and we were like, what is this amazing show? Even though there were a lot of flaws, like, let's get back to that appreciation of that it is an incredible product. There's really great characters who are people. I know, sorry, not characters, but, like, there's a lot to love about this season.
Yeah, no, I love this week. I mean, I'm just a little bit, like, looking ahead to the seven and being, like, three of you contenders now that Emmett is gone. Hopefully not. I mean, imagine if Wade, like, the thing about Australian Survivor editing as well is that you can get 10 or more confessionals in an episode. Wade could double her confessional count next episode, and let's all cross our fingers for that. We're going to get, like, kind of like maybe, like, when they flash back in a movie and we get a character's perspective, maybe we'll get, like, what Wade's been thinking from, like, day one and through the whole season. We'll do, like, a Wade-specific episode.
That could be really enjoyable, actually. Like a semi, you know, sepia toned, here's where Wei's been while you weren't watching.
Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, they have so many episodes. Maybe it's like, all right, well, I just saved George. You're probably wondering how I wound up here. Like, record scratch, freeze frame. We go back to episode one. We see Wei's entire journey from only her eyes.
Now, man, can I tell you how much I would enjoy watching that? If they, you know how US Survivor used to have, like, the recap episode, which was always really annoying?
Yes.
I feel like I would really enjoy it if they were just like 15 minute, like, here's the story from Wei's point of view, and you get how she saw the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the story from Andrew's point of view. And he's like, and then for some reason, some people weren't voting for the same people as other people.
And then I learned what a split vote is. It is day 35.
Like, the equivalent of the show's production of Deep Dives, I would really enjoy watching that.
Yes, and as well, you never know if it was coming, so everyone would be a winner contender. Yeah, and it just, like, sepia tone it, of course, and it's like,
absolutely.
100%, you flash back, it, like, zooms into her eye, and then it zooms out, and she's, like, there on the first day on the mat. And we're like, all right, how do we get
Potter
here?
A little bit like the Pensieve thingy, you know, Dumbledore's little thingy that he pulls the memories out of, and, like, you dive in, and suddenly you're in his memories.
Literally exactly what I was picturing. I'm so glad that you got it. Like, I think that would be amazing. We have so many episodes. Spend some time. That's what your Nonolims are. We get a whole episode of The Invisible Characters.
Quick, call the producers.
Yeah, and then it just ends up, and she's like, and that's my story. End and episode. 70 minutes.
They land back in the dust. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, my God. I definitely think, I hope someone important is listening to this to do our, like, flashback Pensieve episodes. Amazing. All right. Well, looking forward, before we get to the chizzy, you think, obviously, the four won't stay together. I can see that. What do you think's happening next?
So we've got, what, Danny and Flick. Who knows what Andrew's doing? George and Kara, Hayley and Wei. Is Andrew really mad again at Hayley?
Actually, there's a secret scene on 10 play where we can already see that that's true.
Oh yeah, I really believe that, because I thought it was quite funny. Andrew, this episode, was like, this could be the end of Brains. Do they, like, forget what happened? They just voted Hayley out. Brains has been over for a while, Andrew. Anyway, so I think Andrew's mad. Andrew's sticking with Danny and Flick. That's a three. Can he pull Wei back over, or is he mad at Wei as well? Kara's got her immunity idol.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one, that they don't play the immunity idol. Like, she, I thought she might have self-sacrificed again here, and she didn't on the split.
Great, great. Love that they didn't play.
Yes,
that.
So good.
And it's going to be so important in this next round, I think, because there's a lot of really tenuous numbers. I feel like, I mean, could Andrew be the target here, because he's going to be really mad, and I think Hayley's going to see that he's mad and be like, I'm going to get rid of him quickly. Hopefully it doesn't leave him stewing too much in Drew Villa, though.
Yeah.
God, I just feel like it's a mess. Who's going? I have no idea.
Well, Andrew's an interesting one, because I think when he voted for George here in the template extended votes, he was like, no hard feelings. But then in the next scene, he seems like really mad, I think, particularly at Hayley and Wei, that they betrayed him. So there could be some, like, bitter jury stuff going on with him. Like, I do think this four, in my mind, stay together for at least a vote. Like, to take out... And Andrew, as someone who's mad and a physical threat, take out a Flick, who is a physical threat, and now, like, such a huge jury threat, like, it matters. I could see that, because they're both really good options to take out, and then possibly going to war with Danny and whoever else is left.
Danny weasel her way in with Hayley and Wei in place of George and Kara, if the numbers get there.
I could see it. I think that they might be fighting over her vote. I think it might become important.
Me too. I think Andrew alienates himself by being too mad and not willing to work with everyone. I reckon Andrew's in trouble.
Yeah, literally at the well, he's so openly mad at George. I was like, who is this helping right now?
I'll have to watch that. But that's like
Andrew. No, even in the episode before, after the car vote, but then, like, also coming back from camp, he was also openly very angry. So there's a running theme.
I didn't like that. I felt nasty to me. But anyway, yeah, I think Andrew's in trouble. I don't think Kara needs to play her idol in this next round if there's enough, like, Andrew tension. Because why would she be targeted here or George, unless they just turn back around on George again? But that seems unlikely.
It doesn't seem like the fact that Andrew's so mad at Wei and Hayley, like, I think George and Kara are actually kind of set up in the numbers, and that I don't know that there's enough people to come against them.
Yeah, and really the only way to turn this back against George and Kara again and make them at least flush that idol would be for Andrew to swallow the anger and work with Hayley and Wei.
I mean, possibly Flick and Danny team up as a two with Hayley and Wei and then just leave Andrew out, but I do think this four... I mean, also in this the secret scene of after the Tribal Council, like... George and Hayley are talking about, like, let this be the four, which is laughable because I don't think it's going down to the four, but it might last for one vote.
I reckon it lasts for one vote, and then I think George gets Anthony's hands.
I mean, something we need to talk about is that there's at least one more non-Olim because Chelsea got medevaced. And, I mean, there's been a lot of talk of, like, will this be a final three? George mentions final three. They're kind of mentioning final three. I don't know how much the players know. I think I'm just hoping against all hope that it's a final two, because that would mean if it's a final three, there are two more non-Olims.
Jesus. Maybe. And there's not enough jurors for a jury vote, is there?
If it's a final three, that would be 3 and 8 jurors, so you take it down to the 7 like in China, but...
Gosh, that's a small jury.
It's a small jury. I mean, Chelsea did get medevac, so that might have affected things, but... I hope it's a final two. I enjoy the final two. I enjoy that we get that in AU. And also, they don't have enough players to have final threes. And when people are getting medevaced as well, like, I know they probably wanted to with All-Stars, and then when Lee left, that threw a spanner in the works. And I hope that Chelsea leaving also affected it here, and they weren't just like, well, we'll just do another non-Olim. Because if there's 6 episodes left and 2 more non-Olims...
It's the 7, right, where they always do a non-Olim.
Yeah, that would be the next episode. Like, what if next week is just 2 non-Olims? Like, you know, the XL week we spoke about last time. Mm. What if... Oh, my God, that was also a plurality vote. Tess, what is going on? Like, there's something happening. But I do think, like, hopefully next week is not just, like, a whole week of, like, XL week and one person goes at the end. But maybe they'll do that.
I didn't hate that. I think XR week was the thing. We got the whole Zach thing was kind of fun.
It was a thing because All Stars was already such a grind that at least it was interesting. Whereas, like, this doesn't need a big thing.
Like, it is standard. Yeah, but, you know, like, you get the Zach self-sacrifice. That was fun.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want 2 more non-Olims, I will say.
My thoughts on the non-Olim and the whole, like, voting for somebody who's been voted out. I think if they made it, instead of a, like, fake elimination, just tell the players what's going to happen.
Definitely.
Say that they're being voted to some sort of, like, gladiators challenge where the loser is eliminated rather than the winner coming back into the game. Totally changes the thing. It's, like, I know it's just semantics, but it takes away the whole, like, did that person just become unwinnable by being voted out? And it changes the dynamics in terms of who you send to this, like, gladiators challenge where the loser gets eliminated. It makes it way more likely you get the whole Aussie thing of someone wanting to go and, like, put it on their resume that they fought to eliminate someone. Like, it's the exact same mechanic. They can do it the same way, but just tell the players and don't actually vote out the people.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of what they did with XL, and that's what made XL fairly good as a non-Olim structure. I mean, they told them pass and then kept adding to it, so I would say take that out. And there was a sense of, like, gladiator, and, like, Zach did send himself, and there was, like, an interesting, like, mentality going into it. But I just think, like, doing that in week 7 to go into finale week for that would be a little painful. Like, it would kind of take the wind out of the sails for what has been, like, such a high octane season, like, where it kind of added to the fire of All Stars, which was, like, more mellow and way more stable. I feel like this would just, like, start dragging out what it's been like. As we're saying, we had 3 episodes here that were, like, so different from each other. It was, like, 3 weeks in 1 week. And I think to do that will just kind of just suck the life out of it to a degree. So whatever they're doing, I hope it's one, and I hope it's small. Whatever.
No matter what, it's pumping the brakes, because that's what they're literally doing. Like, we've got so much momentum here. You want to see who's going. You want them to go to Jury Villa. You want it to have that sort of momentum anymore. Yeah. And by making it a non-Olim, it is pumping the brakes. It cannot be a positive right now. Other than, I mean, we've said before, like, the jury vote out is probably one of the more acceptable uses of an episode, but even that is slow. Like,
I mean, I take it. I take it on a 50-minute Monday night, for sure. I just don't think they're doing that with the jury numbers that we have, because if it's going to be a final two, then we're going down to 8 jurors with a final two.
Hey, maybe they think that fewer jurors is easier to follow, though, because, you know, Australian Survivor, they don't give us much credit. And they often don't let us see everybody speak. Maybe they're like, hey, who needs that many jurors?
Yeah, well, my question is, was Chelsea meant to be a juror? Because that really changed. Like, I'm like, well, then why would they go from, like, a 9 to an 8? But maybe they were trying to go from a 10 to a 9. Like, we don't really know how, you know, and now they're fine having an 8. I think Chelsea being medevaced from a possible jury and the game does throw a spanner in the works for non-Olims and what they're doing. So I think all we can do is just pray. pray that it goes okay. Pray that we come in next week as high on that week as we are on this week and not how we felt last week. And because I think it's definitely coming next week, not in finale week if there's one. If there's two, you could see a juror removal in the final week. So, guys, cross your fingers.
I'm having it on this week, Shannon, because I feel like I have you wedged between some trouble here.
I'm concerned. I am actually, like, again, like, I love this week. Why does this keep happening? I'm like, great week. Let's end talking about how bad the edit is. Great week. Let's talk about how I'm deathly concerned and we need to start a prayer circle and what on earth are they going to do next week? So concerned.
We're just riding the wave.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say, ride the wave. It's a huge high. Well, we're about to crash, guys. Just brace yourself. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we want to get to the cheesy, but before we did, I wanted to, you know, touch on the stuff with Flick. Cause it was, you know, it there's nothing really to say about it other than it's heartbreaking. I've spoken to Flick a bit in the last couple of days and what she's gone through, like she is just incredible. She started a GoFundMe, which I think is about 6,000 from its target. I'd love if people could, you know, if they can spare to donate or at least share it around and try and get some money and awareness for this amazing cause to fight against dementia and what she's been through. Like, it's very personal to me. My grandma has dementia and I can't imagine a parent so young, early onset dementia. It just was, beyond heartbreaking in every way. And our thoughts are with her.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Our thoughts are with her and her family. What a tragedy to live so publicly.
Mm.
And I mean, I have so much admiration for the way that she's carried herself through that. And I think that I don't know about you. I was in tears watching her run down the hill, thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's beautiful what she said about, you know, that her mum would want her to be there and that her family is supporting her. I think that's a family who have rallied together incredibly. And, I hope that she can keep raising awareness for frontotemporal dementia is a big part of my job, actually. I work with dementia. I'm specialising in geriatrics, so dementia is my bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And I see families going through this every day, and it requires strength that just can't even be described. I think that it's on a different level to what we've been talking about and Survivor and these big flashy things. It's this day-to-day heroism and courage, and I really hope that that she's okay and her family's okay and that they have each other and that they getting something out of bringing light to the struggles that people go through. And there is a lot of work that can be done to improve the support for people in that situation. So, I think that, you know, she's been really, really admirable and our thoughts definitely with her.
Yeah, I mean, you can donate at the link in her bio, but I mean, I would agree, like watching my grandma go through that, the feeling of what she described, and that's what got me because she was so on the nose of describing it and how she's like said goodbye before. And like that feeling of mourning someone while they're alive is not a feeling I would wish on any person. And that for me has been one of the hardest things I've ever experienced with my grandma. And for her to be her mother, for her to do it on Survivor, to have this like deepened, you know, she said goodbye, but like the loss is still there, you know, it's incremental mourning and she's been grieving it and mourning it since day one in the game and for the last 6 years, but then she's still lost her mom in that way. Like there's still extreme pain in that passing, and for her to do that, as you said, publicly on Survivor, to do it at all, as you like, these people, like to go through that, like it's so hard.
Yeah.
I don't even understand where she summons that strength from. Like it is unbelievable to me. And I just hope that we can do something and I think some things are getting auctioned off. I think George is auctioning off his like dirty shirt. I think Gerald's doing something, like there's stuff happening. And I will say that to me heartened me. Like when I first watched, I was so upset, so, so upset. It was a really big trigger for me. And, anyway, for my personal stuff, it was really hard. And just to watch her go through that. But like the one thing that has just buoyed me to a degree in the last couple of days is just seeing that the community was great. Like, no, I haven't seen trolls. I haven't seen people being annoying about her staying and her like strength in that decision, which is absolutely hers and her family. I've just seen people rally and donate and auction things off and share it and send love. And I was like, great job, community. Like that really hardened me. So that's like the little bit of positivity I take. And obviously what Flick's doing herself to spread awareness and earn some money. And hopefully we can do like even more in that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd love to help as well. If there's things I can donate, I'll reach out to Flick.
I know. Like, I want to donate. Like, I'm like, I don't have any. Like, I'm not involved. Well, what should I auction off? I have nothing to... My chili points. People want to buy my chili points. Final episode.
Wow. I've heard you absolutely rail on Mike Bloom for giving away chili points. So I think that's a measure of how important this is.
For the cause, I might do it. I mean, I don't even know how to, like, set that up. But, like, I don't have anything else to auction off.
Hey, I'm Shannon. I mean, I know what you're saying about your grandma, and I'm sure that this has hit, you know, a really sensitive point for a lot of people. Yeah. Dementia is a really, really common and really heartbreaking thing that is not often talked about. And, you know, I hope that you and other people who are affected are, you know, reaching out and talking to their families and their supports.
Oh, right, so now. Much.
It's never been harder than it is during COVID. And we can talk about all the ways that that's been incredibly heartbreaking for people who live in care, especially, but reach out and take care of the people around you, because it's a really hard time.
Yeah, I mean, for me and my family, again, I mean, like, I knew, like, I watched it, my parents watched it a little later in the night, like, I knew it'd be really hard for my dad. And I definitely spoke to my cousin, I spoke to my brother, I spoke to my parents, in our family group, my aunt, we all watch it, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, and like, it's a hard one, you know, it's a trigger as well. And I think for me, like, I don't engage with media around that disease. It's like way too hard for me. I can't do it. You know, obviously The Notebook is its own thing, but like, I cover the show for work. And it was just a lot to come in when I wasn't expecting it, obviously. Like, sorry to make this so much about my personal experience, but it was hard to pivot from that to being, like, mad about a bad twist, and I had to, like, I rewatched the episodes anyway, but I really had to go back and, like, really spend time with that episode because it was a little bit drained for me, because it was so hard to watch.
Yeah, and it really, I did sort of hit out of nowhere, didn't it, and such a gear change to land yourself so much in such a part of real life, you know, that is just real life, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to swap gears like that.
Yes. And now we have to for the chili, and I'm like trying to, you know, but I think it is important to talk about it because obviously it happened and it was a big thing, but I really do want to thank the community. That everyone was great. It was so beautiful to see it. Like, just the tributes and the love that she's got, and the fact that I think she's like about 14K through a 20K GoFundMe at the moment. Like, we're doing great things. And like, that's the best part of this. Like, that's the best part of what Survivor can bring, is like the community and the awareness and the platform to important things. Even when it is a silly game with bad twist 10 minutes later, like, that's what we bring here. And I hope that we can raise more. And I really hope we get to that 20K. And I feel like, amazing job, Flick. I'm like so proud of her. I think she's an amazing woman. And the conversations I've had with her about it in the last couple of days, like, she is so amazing, so strong. I truly believe, like, just a great human. She's doing great things. All I can say is go donate, and then I will awkwardly pivot to the chili.
Well, as another segue, Flick was actually my winner's pick in my little stakes with Jericho.
She was my winner pick too. That's what I said to her. I'm like, you are amazing and strong, and I'm so glad you're my winner pick.
Yeah, she's just so gutsy.
Yes.
Like, even before this, and like, that just brings a new level to, you know, the ballsiness of her and how gutsy she is. But she has been an incredibly strong and always like friendly and resilient player.
Yeah. And I want to believe that, edit aside, she has a shot, because next episode we're going into her memories and we're finding out everything she ever thought from about week two. She was big in week one. And we're going to find out this whole season from her, and then she's going to win. And you know what? I want to believe that that could be true.
Amazing.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to the chili. We're going to pivot. We're going to think about things that aren't important for a second, which is the chili. So take it away, Jacob Sega Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, well, would you like to give your chili points first, or should I go first?
I've heard you like to go first.
Well, just because it helps me with the math at this point. But
I can actually explain the math to you, the split vote and stuff.
Yeah. I know. I go on and on about how, like, it's really simple math to split the vote. And then I'm like, okay, so, like, this person has, like, these small figures. It's a lot harder in South Africa. There are a lot more points going around with that many episodes and two guests and three people giving chili points. It's a lot.
Yeah, and if someone's saying numbers while you're trying to add up other numbers, I find that really difficult.
It's really hard. So maybe these people are right, and maybe I should stop criticizing the math before I
get way on the line. Yeah,
the chart's wrong, but I will give 3 points to George. I can't believe that. Like, it was big, it was risky, it was spectacular in parts, It had its flaws, but then he like rallied from every flaw, as I've said. He is the hamster on the wheel, the double agent idol play, two plurality votes that he is hugely part of. Like, I actually thought that he was really good in that vote, in the last vote. It was Haley's move, but even just saying to her, like, it'll be your move, I think he was right. Like, if she goes with Emmett's move, Emmett did that. Whereas, like, they're the swing votes here who flip. It's Haley's move. It's another feather in her cap, another thing on the resume. So I think that's important to her, and I think he articulated that really well. And I think obviously he approached the right people who did turn to be with him. So there's some good stuff happening there in that last vote as well. So at every point, I would say George did very well and then covered for any of the faults that he'd had.
Mm.
I'm going to give 2 points to Haley. She reintegrated very, very well, hit herself well early. The cracks came immediately, cracks everywhere. The whole thing was cracking and she'd just come back and she was in it. And to get to the point where she's worked so hard again, like she's doing a lot of active work, throwing the heat on George and Kara to get into that swing position. And then to come back here, she's in power with, I think, as we've agreed, the perfect decision. Like she's back. She went out for like 4 hours. She came back and now she's like literally back in power. So very good stuff from Haley. And I will give 1 point to Wei, who I think also made the right decision, is in a good spot with Haley there. You know, she and Haley were both part of the Brains 5 in that first vote as well. So like a lot of power being had. The fact that George even thinks she's worth saving in that middle episode, like clearly she's doing something that makes her seem really workable. And as I've said, people in Jury Villa really rate her. So there is some game happening. We might not be seeing it, but it's absolutely happening. And that is my 3-2-1. Who are you giving points to?
Look forward to the Penn Seed, where we'll be able to watch it all later.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, I never think about these in advance, and I always wish that I had.
that's a great way to solve that.
Like, I agree, Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have to give my 3 points to George. It would be unfair not to. Like, he took so much control. He took the shots. He landed them. And he kept recovering. He ran faster than the hamster wheel.
Yeah.
3 points to George. And again, this sounds ridiculous. Sorry, I'm giving my 2 to Haley. How can I not? Like, she recovered so well. She begged forgiveness when she needed to. She hugged people when she needed to. And then she immediately turned back into the player that we know and love and started swinging around and wedging deep into cracks. So definitely 2 points to Haley. And then 1 point is where the interest is for me. I mean, Kara found an idol and I sort of want to reward that.
And she didn't even self-sacrifice or attempt to.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was kind of torn. I feel like, you know, Danny won the car and didn't get targeted even though she was left all alone, but she had made some big mistakes. No, it's got to be Kara. She found and held on to the idol at the right moment. She has stuck by George's side and that's really worked for her. I know that she's made a lot of big mistakes. This is probably her first point, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And I think that she should have a point for that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I see it. She comes through, like, we've now, between us, given points for the four that come out in power. She did get unanimously voted for, but also saved, but also the twist did make her one of only four options, so that's upsetting. Look, I can see it. It was a tough one.
That as well, like, you know, I don't know, everybody voted for her and then she didn't come back like, you all voted for me. She recovered and was able to continue playing without that being a big deal. I mean, that's not a small thing.
Yeah, I know. I can see it. Look, it gets tough. You're coming down to like so few players. We started this week at 10 players. 3 of them got voted out. Kara also technically got quite voted out. It's a tough
one. Reward way this week. When I feel like Haley had to talk her into the right move. I feel like she was in the right place, you know, by, not by luck, but she couldn't have not been in that position to be taken along with Haley to make that move. And she still needed to be talked into it. She needed to be talked off the bottom of an alliance she wasn't a part of.
I do agree with that. Like, she definitely was pulling much more in the let's go for George direction, despite not even being in Emmett's alliance. But you know, at the end of the day, she did eventually do the right thing. She wasn't unanimously voted for this week. That, to me, was, like, quite a big deciding factor. I mean, I thought Flick, like, I mean, yeah, you could have given to Flick. I mean, she's been playing this game with that burden this whole time. For me, that's like a really important move, but it's, I guess, a bit hard to quantify in Chizzy points, and she is left out of a few of the votes here. So, I mean, she literally was not, she didn't contribute to one person going home this week. So that makes it tough for me.
I didn't love her response to Danny in the KFC Alliance. I felt like she completely disregarded the option of targeting Emmett. At least that's what we were showing. I felt like I would have liked to have seen her entertain her options a little bit and work out why something's best for her moving forward rather than just like, but that's not Braun Strong.
Yeah. I mean, I think like I understand, like as I've been criticizing Danny making the move, like I like Gerald and Flick actually staying with their ally. It's, but then she also like was blindsided in that and then like did waste her idol. Like that's just a bit too many missteps for me, but like human points for sure, which we don't chart. But yeah.
They're unchartable.
Well, the charts that I do have now are Haley leads on 16, George is up to 15, that's heating up, Simon was left on 10, Emmett is now left on 9, Flick has 4, Kez has 4, Danny has 4, Danny has 3, Baden was left on 2, Joey on 2, Gerald on 1, and now Wei and Kara both have a point each. So those are the charts for week 6, and I have some JLP tweets as well.
Go for it.
Yes. All right. So he said George licking Danny's pocket is next level. This was like the most depraved. This was just sickeningly disgusting.
Unhygienic. Very unhygienic.
Is this the grossest thing you've ever seen on Survivor in watching or playing it?
I'm really grossed out by the little fluff that gathers at the bottom of pockets. I try to put my hand too deep into my own pocket because of that like seam fluff. So this was particularly gross to me.
Yeah, I mean, George just wants a TV moment, surely, because you can't get any KFC out of that. That's just so, I don't know why I find it so gross. Like, I guess it's just licking clothes, but you're right. There's something somewhat wholesome about a pocket.
Yeah, especially if there was chicken in there. And there's chicken, like, no.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's been a lot in International Survivor this week about, like, bringing reward back. But, like, the way that you get around it is you just, you know, you just lather it all over your pockets and then you could always be licking your own pockets.
They can't take that away, yeah.
Yeah, and there's no way they could take that away.
Are people mad about going through the rice with your hand looking for an idol? Like, this is so much grosser than that.
This is disgusting in every capacity. All right. So JLP said, yes, George, it's always a good idea to keep your nuts in your pants on national TV. This is when he was doing the dance move. Am I crazy that he's done this dance move before on this season?
Yeah, I think I've seen it before. And I thought at the time, like, great squats, George.
Yeah, that looks so hard.
Challenges.
Yeah, and Laura did the whale, and she said she's, like, been thrown out of clubs for it. And she, like, spat all over herself. And I was like, where is the hygiene of this cast?
That was so unexpected. Isn't she, like, a respected marine biologist?
I mean, I guess it makes sense why she does the whale. I put it together.
I thought it was skilled. I couldn't do that.
How much spit she got out of her own mouth to spit over herself? Is that what you're saying?
She also, like, belly flopped onto the ground, didn't she?
Yeah, and she, like, didn't seem to be hurt. Like,
yeah.
It was actually, like, physically impressive, even though I was confused. And, like, they spend a lot of time, it seems, just doing, like, strange dance moves. That's, like, all the camp life we get.
Yeah, I would have really struggled with that. I don't have a strange dance move. It's a kind of, like, social thing I find very anxiety-producing, having to come up with a strange dance move. Yeah.
I mean, I don't either. I guess I would say the robot is my, like, signature.
More of a classic.
Yeah. Like, my family often at functions make a dance circle and go into the middle, and like my thing is I always do the robot. It's not a good robot. Or the running man, maybe. Like maybe the running man more than the robot, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not a good dancer.
No. No. You can do the robot. I think that's pretty cool.
It's not a good robot.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think I'm telling a lot about myself in this. This is my favorite tweet from JLP this week. He said, come on, guys, don't blame George for not splitting the votes. All caps, just do it yourself.
Thanks, JLP. Voice of the people.
Yeah, he's basically a guest on this podcast at this point because they were like, well, George didn't tell us to split the vote. He must have been in on it. It was like, you all had the capacity. You all had the brain power to do this. It is in the 30s. You should know to do it. Like, don't blame George for this one.
Production can't control JLP, can they?
I mean, this is JLP control. They should unleash him. He's a wild stallion just wishing to run free. I'd like to see what he said, what he says, uncompletely unleashed, if this is what's allowed. he said, that's so hilarious. Haley pretending to just figure out that George and Kara have been working together as swing votes. Didn't you work with them in this very capacity prior to redemption?
Hayley does so much of that, though, when she's like, oh, my God, guys, I cannot believe George and Kara. What they're doing is just despicable. She doesn't believe a word of it, does she?
Yeah, she's like, she was obviously, like, played her idol as part of that in the Kez vote, literally just did it as well as part of the Gerald vote, like, has been, as JLP is saying, quite a core part of that. JLP coming in with, like, the hardcore analysis.
Yeah, agreed.
He says, finally, no redundant questions before the challenge. Let's just get to it.
Oh, wow. Is he calling his own questions redundant?
Yeah. They need to unleash him. He pays himself out a lot. I don't know if it's just, like, that he's giving, like, subtle digs at what production makes him do, or if he's just trying to get ahead of it because people tweet, like, JLP, stop with the questions, and he's like, I agree with you. You know, he's, I don't know what it is. It's some sort of strategy, social media strategy.
Yeah. I do remember him at one stage being like, this isn't Family Affair or something, about asking questions. So I believe in JLP's integrity.
Yeah, the last tweet he said, I love how JLP laughs at his own dad jokes, # soul destroying. That was during the foot challenge where he was like, it'll be soul, you know, soul, S-O-L-E.
Yeah, soul destroying, very cute.
Yeah, just in case you missed it in the challenge, which I actually did and then was sent the clip, and it was a great pun. Like, he needed to make sure it was, like, you know, yeah, double down
on. Yeah, people didn't catch that.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, the questions I think we've mostly gotten to, but the main one we got from everyone was, like, let's end with a little bit of sorting these people into Hogwarts houses. It is tradition. It is important. I mean, Brains versus Brawn is Ravenclaw versus Gryffindor, like, at its core, surely.
Absolutely is. I mean, actually, this couldn't be an easier cast to sort.
Yeah.
But we always get so much out of it, though.
And I feel like we often disagree, so it's fun.
That's true. Yeah, we've created a lot of hybrids along the way.
Yes, I mean, that's what you got to do. I'm 60-40 Ravenclaw Hufflepuff. I'm a Ravenpuff, and that's important. It can't be so binary. It can't be so
objective. Yeah, people like someone like that. Yeah. But anyway, let's do it to them.
All right, Hayley.
Oh, Ravenclaw.
Yes, okay, I'm glad you agree, because I felt like maybe you'd say a little bit of Slytherin, but, like, she's you. You're both Ravenclaws.
Or Ravenclaws, whatever you said. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly Ravenclaw, with, like, at least in the game, getting, like, a little bit of that Slytherin out there, that, like, diabolical thinking.
We enjoy that, though, us Ravenclaw.
Yes, which, I mean, I don't. I'm, like, 1% Slytherin, but I can see how it pairs together well for Survivor.
Mm, agreed.
George?
Oh, my God, he literally slithered through the grass like a snake.
That's true. He is 100%. I've never, I don't know that I've seen, I mean, Dave had, like, a Slytherin Gryffindor thing. Like, George is, I don't know that I've ever seen such a hardcore, pure Slytherin as George on the show.
Oh, I'm sorry, he's a political operative, but, like, he is a politician who slithered through the grass like a snake. Nobody has been as classic Slytherin as George.
Yeah, and you gotta love that from George. He's like, look, it's, like, week 6. Tess usually comes on around this time. I'm gonna slither through the grass just so I, like, lay my claim to what my Hogwarts house is.
Exactly.
Okay, Wei.
Gryffindor is my... Oh, Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I don't see Gryffindor at all.
Well, it's her wanting to be in the pack. I see her really wanting to be part of the big pack.
I see that as a Hufflepuff thing, like it's a very social thing. It's a soft approach. True.
Yeah, with her it's more soft. You're right. No, she's a Hufflepuff.
I struggle because I think, like, bookish author is Ravenclaw, like, in the dictionary. But I think her personality is much more Hufflepuff.
I don't feel like, well, for starters, her t-shirt has a quokka on it, which is really cute, and a quokka kind of looks Hufflepuffy to me.
Mm.
What do you reckon?
I think she's...
Like a badger?
Yeah, I think she's Hufflepuff, but I think possibly, like, I think her Ravenclawness is outside the game, so we don't see it as much. I mean, she's, like, an incredibly successful author. Like, this is a Ravenclaw thing, but, like, she's not necessarily, like... They are going to her to split the vote, but I don't know that she's, like, a Survivor Ravenclaw. I think we see a lot of her, like, personality as Hufflepuff come out, but in her real life, there's probably, like, I don't know, like, 30-40% Ravenclaw that comes out that we just aren't seeing.
I'm pretty sure she writes, like, young adult and children's books, though, right?
Yeah. But she, like...
I mean, that's Hufflepuff. It's, like, really nice and soft, social...
Yeah.
You know, cares about the people...
I do think it is majority Hufflepuff, but I just think, like, an author, you'd put that in Ravenclaw most times. But I think the way that she approaches it, like, it is a very Hufflepuff thing. Also, we don't see her on the show. It's very hard to do.
Yeah, that leaves it a little bit harder.
Yeah. But I do think mostly Hufflepuff.
Agreed.
Kara, I might say the same.
Yeah, definitely Hufflepuff. Learned a lot about what an empath is.
Yes.
I think that that is a Hufflepuff.
Yes, that is literally Hufflepuff, you know, to its extremes. Like, I don't see what else it could possibly be.
The general, like, benign, like, oh, what just happened? Is very Hufflepuff.
Yes. Danny?
Gryffindor.
Gryffindor?
Gryffindor Slytherin? Do they ever know?
Does she have Slytherin in her? Like, I mean, I guess she's trying to, like, blindside people, but not, like, I feel like she's bulldozing through it. Like, to me, it's, like, hardcore Gryffindor.
Well, because the whole, like, bring him close and then stab him in the back thing.
Yeah, but she's doing it, like, quite bluntly. Like, it's I think if a Slytherin was doing that, it would be a little bit more lethal and it would work. Whereas, like, a Gryffindor doing it, like, yes, like, the big move is there for sure, but she's just, like, kind of, like, running at it, if that makes sense. Like, that's why I see Gryffindor just, like, hard at it.
And maybe that's what's so complicated about Dani, is that she's a Gryffindor who kind of wants to be a Slytherin, which is not a thing. And so we're like, what are you doing?
Yes, I agree. Like, the evilness of Slytherin has more of a deft touch, whereas Dani's just, like, we're saying, like, we're making this big move right now. We're doing it at this time for some reason. I'm talking about it to this group of people. It's like, that's what a Gryffindor would do. It's like, it's that confidence.
Agreed. Yep, you're right.
She, I think, as well, like, in the preseason, like, she really, like, exemplified Braun in a lot of the marketing. And I think, like, was, like, when I say it's Ravenclaw versus Gryffindor, like, she was, like, that Gryffindor of that.
I think, though, you can be kind of, like, the heavy, which is more Slytherin, like, you know, Malfoy's mates, like, there is that type of Slytherin that is just kind of like, the muscle, but with malintent, which sometimes is Dani, and it's part of why I love her.
I see it, but I see it in, like, a small way. Like, I definitely see her as Gryffindor.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay.
What about Flick?
I'm torn between Gryffindor and Hufflepuff.
Same.
I think she's more Gryffindor at heart, and that we've seen the goodness of what she's done around dementia awareness and are wanting to say that she's Hufflepuff, but that in fact she is at her core a competitor that likes to be loyal, and to me that's Gryffindor.
Totally agree. Gryffindor, but like mostly Gryffindor for sure. This is getting, like, so, like, I think before we used to just do one house, and now we're, like, really into, like, the percentages of it, which is fun. Which is what people love. That's what people are here for. Andrew, he has 9 confessionals to this point. Are we going to work out who Andrew is?
Who is Andrew?
That's when we get over 2 hours into our week 6 Australian Survivor podcast. The question, who is Andrew?
This might be one of the most telling sortings that we've ever done, because nothing pops to mind with me immediately with Andrew. I'd say not Ravenclaw.
Yeah, he was a brain, but he really is struggling on those split points. I need to keep coming back to it.
Brain muscle, though. And, I mean, it's more like the caretaker, isn't he? Like, he's kind of the muggle. Like, I don't feel like he fits into the houses.
Okay, tough one. I mean, like, he is a bare hand animal catcher in his career. Like, that truly is Gryffindor. Like, we don't see a lot of that. Like, the fact that this man is a bare hand animal catcher with a huge YouTube following, that's so interesting. Like, I can't believe that translates to the character we've got from Andrew. But, like, knowing that part of his personality, that is Gryffindor.
Yeah, agreed. But have you ever watched his YouTube?
I didn't want to, because I'm a vegetarian and I don't like people catching animals with their bare hands.
I haven't looked it up either, because it sounded like something that might freak me out a bit. Yeah. But I'd heard that he's more of a comedian.
What?
I can't remember who told, someone told me this, that it's more like funny videos.
Someone's going to have to do some research and actually watch these videos, I think.
I think it's meant to be like slap. Oh my God, I'm so sorry, Andrew, if I'm completely wrong about this. But I think it's more like slapstick.
Well, what's like, that?
No, like, you know what I mean.
It's
like,
no, but like, what house is that? I didn't realize it was slapstick bare hand animal catching.
Oh my God, I could be completely wrong. I haven't watched it, but I swear I've heard that somewhere.
Now I'm just imagining what I was imagining before, which was him catching animals, but with the soundtrack.
Exactly. I think that's what it is. So he's not Slytherin. He's not Ravenclaw. I think he might be a Hufflepuff.
I think we see Hufflepuff, and I would have said preseason based on what I knew of him Gryffindor, and I've learned so little about him since then that it's really hard for me to make a final call.
And I think it's really sad that we can't make that call, and that the TV show owes us that, and we look forward to his sepia-toned episode.
Yes, we'll know from then. We'll know next episode.
Yeah, we'll survive.
All right, I'll do one more, because he only left, like, less than 24 hours ago. What about Emmett?
I actually think it's a Slytherin. I know you're going to say Gryffindor.
I am.
And I can see that he is the typical he's our Aussie mold here, like, you know, super buff, keeps the team together, blah, blah, blah. But I felt like he was more cunning than that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I could see him be, like, that's a smack talk. Like, I could see him kind of, like, talking down to some of the other houses the way Malfoy might. But yeah, I still think Gryffindor.
Joey's nose in it and, like, played around. Like, a Gryffindor would never do that.
That is true. Like, where's the honor in that? Like, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
He doesn't care about that. Like, I think he's a Slytherin.
I think he's convinced me. I mean, I was coming in being, like, big, braggadocious Gryffindor. Like, but there's more evilness there.
He's way more malicious than that.
That is true. And he always has been.
I think that's why I like him, because he's not your Gryffindor. You know, he's this caricature of a big tough guy, but then he's also having fun being evil, and he is not high and mighty about the honor of the game. He pretended to be a little bit with that whole like worthy of winning thing, but I reckon that he was using that in a manipulative way, and that is Slytherin.
I totally agree. I mean, it's always amazing what insights we get out of the Hogwarts houses, but like if Emmett was really coming out there and being pure deserving, which I think some people took it as, then I think Gryffindor. But I think we've agreed, like, that was a strategy for him. It was a strategy that made sense about going physically strong and having shields, and he was, you know, paying lip service a little bit to what deserving was, and that's a Slytherin. So I think we got a lot of insights into Emmett's character through that.
And to why I like him as a person.
Wow. You really changed. I would never have come in here saying anything other than Gryffindor with Emmett. Like, I just see him in Maroon, but you really turned me around, and now I can't see him as anything other than Slytherin.
I'm glad I can bring something to the table, Shannon.
Yeah, I mean, this was great. This is why we do it every season. We get so much insight out of the Hogwarts houses. But, Tessa, where... You said, you know, you don't do a lot of social media. Where can people find you on social media now that we've, you know, spent over 2 hours talking about all this? And I need more of your insights.
We can't really, sorry. Listen to next time. I don't do the socials.
All right, guys, you can find Tessa next time there's a plurality vote. She'll be here. She'll be summoned.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you find me. That's the answer. Sorry.
That's true. Well, I mean, I've had such a fun time talking it through with you. I'm glad we got, like, such a strategic heavy week to talk it through. So many plurality votes as always. Hogwarts houses that made a lot of sense. Like, what a good time.
That perfect week. I'm so glad that I was on this week. I am excited and nervous for what's coming, but I mean, it's been delivering and I'll be watching.
Yes, so fun. Well, there's a lot going on in the world of International Survivor. We're doing Survivor South Africa. Last week we had Palesa. Next week we have Jean. And it's really fun to me, like, the little connections we talked about, like idol passing being so relevant last week to both. This week we had yelling in the voting confessional was, you know, what George did and was happening on Survivor South Africa. So I'm always like, oh, like, as an international community, we are, like, experiencing these, like, weird parallels in the same time, which I find really fun.
I find them really good to watch together. South Africa and Australia are like the perfect partnership to me.
Because they're like salty and sweet. You know, it's, yeah, is that's what it's like. They're so different that it complements.
Exactly.
Like, you might watch South Africa and be like, that was fun, but I could use a little bit more chaos. And then you go to Australia, like, too much chaos, take it back. And then you go to South Africa and that's how we do our week.
No, you're like, I want the chaos and the flash and the confusion of what people are thinking. And then you're like, oh, I had enough of that. So I'll go for a little bit of like in-depth strategy, people who know exactly what they're doing, production who have thought through the meaning of the twists that they put into place. And then, you know, you're like, oh, that was a bit much. Back to my suite.
Now you're like, I'm thinking too much. Now I want to turn my brain off a little bit. And now you're like, but now I should turn my brain on. And that's what I go through every week. That's my structure of my week.
I don't know how you talk about them both at the same time. It's a lot, but they are enjoyable.
With a lot of difficulty, basically. It's only because I can keep them in such separate spaces. I think that it works well. Like, that's almost like watching two different shows at this point. So it's like
water. They wouldn't mix.
Yeah, like it works for me watching it just because they are so different and I just hold them in that different headspace. But we're going to have exit interviews in a different podcast. I'm going to put the recap out with you, Tessa, ASAP. And I haven't even spoken to Emmett yet, but I really enjoyed my chats with Gerald and Laura. And I should have Emmett in a few hours and then I'll put that out. So I hope everyone has checked that out. We actually got all three this week. That was the first time. Really grateful for that. I was really concerned they wouldn't give me like Gerald. And I'm like, no, but then they did.
I can't wait to listen.
Yeah, I was like going in willing to be like, please give me Gerald. And then they were like, you know, you got him. And I was like, great. So, yeah, we're going to have that. Next week, we're going to have Baden, OG Survivor Baden, Baden Gilbert, who's going to talk with us about possibly a terrifying week 7, the penultimate week. And that should be a lot of fun. And then Talking Tribal is happening every week. Nick is on that. We have a lot of fun recapping that, getting the takes out ASAP. And Luke is back. He should be back for next week. So
how exciting.
It should be the four of us as well, like Nick, Luke, me, and Nathan. That should be really fun.
What a panel.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing that. And that is all that I have for this podcast. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Up feed. Follow me at Shannon Gates so that you don't miss any of that. But Tessa, thank you so much for coming on again and for manifesting this great week by being my guest.
My pleasure, and I look forward to next time.
Yeah, so I will, you know, save you again, hopefully with a good week from your incredibly important life. But thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk with us. Thank you for everyone for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and we will see you next time. See you on the exits, and go donate to Flix GoFundMe. Bye.
Bye.
Australian Survivor is a
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Shkeli. Million.
Tribe.
Tribe.